It's business time, baby.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster
conquered the street.
You like fighting a woman?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Delete. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo! I am a one-man wrecking crew.
Sorry, I always get very emotional. Weddings, it's just, you know, just rips me up inside, you know? That and when Seth Rollins, you know, blocks me on Twitter, I just don't know, man. I just don't know. Yes, imagine my surprise when I went to wish congratulations to the guy after I saw the photo of he and his bride-to-be. Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch are engaged to be married, everyone, in case you didn't hear. If not, you'll hear about it 5,000 times tomorrow night on TV, I'm sure. But I went to wish him congrats, and lo and behold, I have been blocked by the Beast Slayer. Was it something I said? I guess the Universal Champion doesn't like me very much. Well, great. Now where am I supposed to send these wedding gifts that I got for him? I mean, I got him... Look at this. I got him this Will Ospreay t-shirt from Pro Wrestling Tees. It's all bagged up here and ready to go. And now this is useless. Then I got him this. Here. It's a piggy bank. For him to keep all that money that he's got in his big bank account. I don't know what I'm going to do with all this stuff now. Put that down over there. These kids are so sensitive these days. This is episode 614 of the Sala Monster Tries to Pick Up the Broken Pieces of His Life and Move On for Sunday, August 25th, 2019. See, I even drew a little speech bubble by the pig's mouth with the words, "Burn it down" inside. Which is actually making me very hungry. I think I will have a ham sandwich for lunch today once I am done recording here. Shout out to Audible and all the folks who keep on taking advantage of the free Audible trial that you can, in fact, not only take advantage of, but get one free audiobook as part of it, whether you continue your trial beyond the 30 days or not. Just go to audibletrial.com/Sala Monster. And again, tons of wrestling books to cash in on. A lot of people actually go beyond the 30 days. Whatever floats your boat, just make sure you use our link. And also the Labor Day sale on Pro Wrestling Tees is coming up this week. It starts on Wednesday, August 28th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Runs right on through Tuesday, September 3rd. 20% off all shirts in our store. All you got to do is use the code Labor Day, all one word, Labor Day at checkout. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/Sala Monster Sounds Off. I mean, you've got over 30 shirts in the store. You've got skulls. You've got vegan belts. There's the classic No Distraction Roll-Ups tee. Or you could just rock the logo and represent the podcast when you're out and about. So that would be great. And last but not least here, shout out to all of our PayPal VIPs this week. You can always make a donation if you so choose. On thesalamonster.com, you'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. I want to say thank you to the Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton. Rocking it this week, as always. The Bangkok Bandit, Nipit Viramatikal. John Loosecannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera. The Florida Freebird, Brian Becerra. Out of Control, Cody Thomas. Beast Mode, Brock Joseph. Such a great name. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Stephen Handyman, Halistic, The Anarchist, Andrew Heller, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, The Diamond Dallas, Dance Machine, Harrison Soap, Killshot, Keith Hart, Michael Rambo Reap, and the San Jose Strangler, Ruben Garcia. Also got a shout out, hi, I'm Chris Evans, His new video series, The Blackest Marks You Know, is now online. And it can be seen by going to the following website here. You got to get a website shortener, Chris. It'll make it a lot easier to read this. But you can go to... It's Hi, I'm Chris. So H-Y-E, I'm Chris, .wixsite.com/TBM. YK1. That's TBM, YK, and the number 1 to check out his initial installment. John Krauser is a member of the Sound Off family. He's got a one-man show happening in Chicago next weekend. That's the same weekend as AEW's All Out pay-per-view, which we are going to talk about here in a little bit. You get a time traveler, a magician, and a stand-up comedian. All in one jam-packed show. It's got three unique personalities on one stage for one night only. So if you are going to be in Chicago, listen up. Because on Sunday, September 1st, at 7:30 p.m., that's Central Time, local time, at the Blackout Cabaret at the Second City. So that's where it is taking place. The Blackout Cabaret at the Second City. Tickets are just $10 or $8 if you are a college student. I can probably pass as a college... I won't be there in Chicago, unfortunately, but if I was, I'd put a backpack on. I probably could pass as a college student. Although I'm sure you need ID. But just Google Johnny and Friends Second City, and the first link that comes up is where you can order tickets. So go ahead and show your support if you are in Chicago for All Out next weekend. If you're not flying out first thing the next morning, maybe some of you already live in the area. The show runs just under an hour. Think about making that as a part of your weekend. John could use your support. And I want to say thank you also to Pirate Scar on iTunes, Dre the Franchise, and Stumpy1138, who has been listening to the podcast for 5 years. Thank you all for the love on iTunes. If you are listening to this on Sunday, and even I guess if you're listening to it after Sunday, I am going to be reviewing tonight's Evolve 134 show. This was a double shot this weekend. Last night was Evolve 133. I didn't have a chance to check that show out. Although I did hear about the Time Splitters reunion between Alex Shelley and Kushida, which is very cool. Tonight is Evolve 134. And I will be co-hosting or co-reviewing the official Evolve review for John Pollock's post-wrestling website, along with Davey Portman. So you can head on over to postwrestling.com. We're not doing it live, but it will be up in the archives later tonight, early tomorrow morning, for those of you who want to hear me, you know, co-review tonight's Evolve show. For post-wrestling, that's the place to go to check that out. That is a one-time special, and I'm looking forward to that. It is official. NXT is moving to the USA Network and going live for 2 hours on Wednesday, starting September 18th. We did not know the official start date. I had heard September 18th. I had heard September 25th. I heard October 2nd, the same night that AEW debuts. So now we know that it is September 18th. That's 2 weeks before AEW debuts live on TNT, so they're getting a jump on them. At which point, the two shows will then be going head-to-head from 8 to 10 p.m. every single week. Although that may not be the case on the West Coast if NXT airs live there, and we don't have an answer to that question yet. The show will still air on the WWE Network. NXT will still air and be archived on the WWE Network, but it will air on a 24-hour delay. So instead of airing at 8 p.m. or whatever time, usually on Wednesdays the show would go up, it will now not air, first run airing on the network, until 8 p.m. on Thursdays. And after which, it will be available on demand as it always is. So it's not totally going away from the WWE Network. It is just no longer going to be first-run programming on the network. The announced team is expected to remain the same. Mauro Ranallo back on, I guess, broadcast TV, you would call it. Back on USA, along with Nigel McGuinness and Beth Phoenix. The show will remain at Full Sail each week. AEW is going to be running bigger buildings. It's going to be very interesting to watch these two head-to-head, side-by-side like that. For all the talk about AEW has a lot of catching up to do, and they'll never be WWE, and WWE is the big time. This is a little bit different because AEW, I mean, they're not running 20,000 seat buildings, but they're going to be running buildings where they're going to have 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 10,000 people. And at Full Sail, you're only going to have about 400 or 500. So it's going to be a very different atmosphere between the two shows. The possibility of an FS1 deal was very much real to the point that Fox was expecting it and they were telling their affiliates about it. So I would imagine they can't be too happy about this. It's almost like the rug got pulled out from underneath them. But WWE has at least 30 and as many as 50 million reasons, per the Observer, to have agreed to move NXT to USA. That is how much money they are said to be getting per year for what looks to possibly be a 2-year deal. So let's assume it is a 2-year deal. We don't know that for a fact, but let's say it's 2 years. That would be potentially $100 million or more for 2 years of NXT on the USA Network. So if NXT wasn't profitable before, it just got profitable now. That's a lot of money for the Velveteen Dream and Matt Riddle and Adam Cole. I hope they're all paid accordingly. When you hear dollar figures like that being thrown around, you can see why Vince McMahon would want to make that move. Yes, to stick it to AEW, absolutely. That's very much a part of this. But also because he loves money, right? Isn't that what he used to say? It's all about the money. That's what he used to say on TV. That was a shoot. It was all about the money with that third hour of Monday Night Raw, which is said to be worth about $50 million alone to the company each year. It was a USA idea, USA push for it. I mean, I guess if Vince wanted to stand up to USA and say, listen, this is a bad idea, we don't want to do it, he could have done that, but who knows how USA would have reacted to that. You flash $50 million in your face for an extra hour of a show that you've already been doing for 20-some-odd years. He took the money. And you know what? If I were in his shoes, like with the NXT stuff here, I might have done the same thing. But that third hour of Raw has come at a heavy cost. How much of that supposed $50 million a year extra are they losing each year that goes by as they erode their audience? I wonder what it's costing them long term. I know what they're making. Nobody knows what they're making. Let's just make that clear. We don't know for a fact that that is what they are making. If those figures are to be believed, then we have a sense of what they're making in the short term. But what is it costing them in the long term? That would be my question. Now, a perfectly fine 1-hour show in NXT has now doubled in size, coupled with 3 hours of Raw and 2 hours of SmackDown every week. That's a lot of wrestling. Belt Fan Dan on Twitter, who has made title belts for WWE before. He drops little bits of news every now and then. I don't know that it's always completely accurate, but he posted back in July that he was being told NXT was going not to FS1, which is what everybody was talking about, but to USA. And he also said that the 205 Live roster is likely going to be, in his words, absorbed into SmackDown once the show moves to Fox. That makes it sound like SmackDown is the blob or something. They're going to be absorbed. I want somebody to do an illustration of the blob, but the blob is SmackDown. The blob represents SmackDown. And in the blob, you see these little faces of all the 205 Live guys. Yeah, there's Drew Gulak's face, and there's Tony Nese's face. They've all been absorbed. But there's been a lot of rumors this week of the 205 Live possibly being scrapped in the next month or two, and the talent being migrated over to the SmackDown roster, which is not a terrible idea so long as it doesn't lead to 3 hours of SmackDown, which is my biggest fear. The 205 Live stuff, nothing was said officially about it this week. It's still just in the rumor realm, but I've seen it mentioned in a few different places where I think there may be some smoke to this fire, which is why I mention it. You know, but if they were to scrap 205 Live as its own separate standalone show, that would leave NXT UK and I guess Main Event as the only original weekly in-ring programming left on the WWE Network. Plus, you got the monthly pay-per-views, you've got the quarterly takeover specials, which are staying on the network, by the way. Now, I look at that, and I still think the network pays for itself. If you watch all of the pay-per-views, or even some of the pay-per-views, and you watch all the takeover specials, which is the best stuff they produce consistently, and if you are somebody who also happens to be into some of the classic content, sometimes they put DVDs on there and stuff like that, hey, I'm not sure why anybody would cancel their network subscription as long as you can afford it. You know, if you can't afford $10 a month for the network, then obviously you've got, bigger issues than subscribing to the WWE Network to worry about. But, you know, if the WWE Network is one of many things that you subscribe to Netflix and Pandora or whatever, and it's one of many things you subscribe to, I hear people saying, I'm going to cancel my network. Oh, NXT is moving to USA. That's it. That's the only reason why I even had my network subscription. You know, I mean, cancel your network subscription if you never use it. But NXT is still going to be on the network. And it's still a steal for the price that they charge. We'll see how much they charge for that premium tier once it launches. But all this chatter I saw, and even some of it in the Facebook group about canceling the network because of this, this doesn't make any sense. So USA, you know, I don't want to spend too much time talking ratings and numbers. I know people are pretty much bored of it at this point, but I do think it's worth mentioning. USA Network does about 1 million viewers typically at 8 p.m. on Wednesdays. So NXT would have to at least stay in that range to be considered a success. They'll have those first two shows unopposed to any other wrestling programming. You know, head-to-head, I think it's going to be fun to see who comes out on top. I said months ago, somebody asked me to make a prediction. And I'm going to stick with my prediction. I said months ago that I thought 500,000 viewers would be a realistic place for AEW to start. And hopefully they can then grow that number from there, because you would hope the number goes up and not down. But I figured they would start around the 500,000 range. If they do 1 million, I'll be impressed. If they do a lot more than 1 million, I'll be very impressed. You know, this is going to be a very different head-to-head battle for eyeballs each week as compared to 20 years ago. And not just because now we have, you know, DVR. I look at those numbers like, you know, people view the, and I'm talking about the numbers from 20 years ago. I look at those numbers the way that people look at the juicing era of baseball with all the home runs. You know, not that guys don't juice at all anymore, but it's a different time now. They've cracked down on a lot of that. It was the Wild West back then. Those days are over. If people know they can watch NXT on the network 24 hours later, are people going to be more apt to favor watching AEW live over NXT? I mean, that's my plan. I'll speak for myself. That's my plan with this. I'll flip during commercials, or if there's like a really big main event on NXT. But my plan is to watch AEW live and then get caught up later on NXT, because that's what I do now. I never watch NXT when it airs on Wednesdays. I mean, years ago I used to do that. I mean, my brother and I would sit down and watch it, and he lost all interest, so, you know, I was watching it, and then just started doing other things, or watching other things, because I knew I could just pick up with it later that night, the next day. I usually watch it the next day, sometimes I watch it on Friday. People who are already accustomed to doing that will probably just keep doing that. Yeah, with the ratings, there is one interesting note. The Sports Business Daily I saw this week reported that starting October 3rd, which is the day after AEW debuts on TNT, Nielsen is going to begin incorporating out-of-home data into its overnight ratings. And instead of being released the next morning at 8 a.m., they're going to be pushing the release of those overnight numbers back to about 1 p.m. each day. So I'm not sure that's really going to affect NXT or AEW much, since we already, I mean, usually when we hear about ratings, it's in the afternoons, right? It's later in the day. But if you do see early numbers reported the very next day, they could very well end up being bigger than what the actual numbers end up being later in the day, now that they're going to be incorporating all of this additional data. So anyway, if you don't follow ratings or give a shit about them, then none of this even matters. But, you know, some people mock, I have to say this, some people, you know, well, the Wednesday Night Wars, right? The Wednesday Night Wars. And then some people mock that, what war? There is no war. And when you hear me mention it, or if I have it in a funny graphic, you know, if I have my very talented guy do the graphics on YouTube, and we always try to make them humorous. And if you see all the Wednesday Night War, it's partially tongue-in-cheek, but not completely. Because if you don't think that there are people on both sides who don't view this as a competition, you're out of your mind. You don't know what you're talking about. AEW can say that, oh, we don't look at it as competition, we're just doing our own thing. WWE can say that also, they don't view it as competition. But you know full well that they're both going to be paying attention to what the other is doing. That's inevitable. And possibly even programming their shows after a while in certain segments accordingly. That's what happened 20 years ago, and I suspect that's what will end up happening here as well. And neither side is going to be very happy if they're the ones getting their asses handed to them when the numbers come out the very next day. Because when it comes to television, that is still how a lot of people measure success, even though you could argue that it's really about how much you pull in ad money and stuff like that. As a fan, none of this matters to my bottom line, but it's fun to follow along and play both sides against each other, while still flipping around like it's 1998 and just enjoying both shows. So, is it a war? Yeah, it is. It's a war for eyeballs. And nobody wants to be on the losing end of that war. You know, success is not assured for AEW. I know they've been very impressive so far. A whole string of sellouts, and there's a palpable buzz around this product without them even having had their first television show yet. That's very impressive. That's not anything we've seen from another company or startup in a very long time, if ever. They've got something magical going on right now. How long can they ride that wave out for? Well, we're about to find out. But success is not guaranteed. They could blow everyone's predictions away, or they could flop, like Vince McMahon taking a stunner. And if they flop, that's terrible for wrestling. So I hope they succeed. I hope NXT does well, and maybe they can combine each week for a couple of million people. As for keeping NXT as is and not messing with the formula of the show, I hope that's the case. I hope Triple H is allowed to just keep running the show the way that he has been. But the best part of WWE's announcement of NXT moving to USA, and I'd say this qualifies for sad tweet, was Andrade copy and pasting the email that he received from WWE's PR team. He quote tweeted WWE's announcement of NXT moving to USA, and in his tweet, in his comment, he just pasted the following text verbatim. Hey, as a former NXT champion, can you comment on this? NXT is going live on the USA Network on Wednesdays. He literally just pasted what they sent him, the question that this PR person sent him. And at the end, he just added three fist bump emojis. I love it. It's simple. Hey, right? You want me to comment on it? Here, I just commented on it. There you go. I don't even want to give them publicity, but I will. There was an article on a website called On Smash, which I guess usually covers music and sports. I don't know that they have an abundance of wrestling coverage, but they did here on this day. The article was authored by somebody calling themselves Ivy League MVP, with the headline, AEW's success prompts Vince McMahon to desperately start a TV war and save WWE. Save WWE. You would think the company is about to go out of business. This company's worth $6 billion last time I checked. But Vince McMahon is putting the company's third brand on opposite AEW to save WWE. I did not know that. What a stupid headline. Then there's the article. As fans, we've been fucked by the product of WWE for the last 18 years. with no signs of even caring what their core audience wants. After John Cena quietly retired last year, and his younger audience all reaching their teens now, WWE has casually shifted back into the TV-14 lane, eliminating their PG run. Apparently, we have been fucked by WWE for the last 18 years. The least they could do is buy us dinner. I don't know about you, I enjoyed what I saw on SmackDown in 2002. We got Hogan Rock that year at WrestleMania. We got a great SummerSlam that year. Shawn Michaels came back to the ring. But more than that, Ivy League MVP says that John Cena quietly retired last year. So quietly, I guess I didn't hear about it. He didn't tell anybody. That's how quiet it was. He only told Ivy League MVP. Cena did tell TMZ in June of this year that he has recently contemplated the idea of retirement. That's very different than saying that the man quietly retired last year. Here's another fact I didn't know. Did you know that WWE is no longer TVPG? They're now back to being TV-14? Because I sure as hell didn't know that. I bet Mattel didn't know that either. You know, a few promos where people drop some naughty words does not mean the product has reverted back to TV-14. They've done that for years. They try to be edgier here and there. They get a bug up their butt every now and then, so they get a little bit edgier. But it is still very much a PG show. That has not changed. He said, with Warner Media helping them on the TVN for digital distribution, through Bleacher Report app and YouTube, AEW has been hitting home runs on every move they've made in the last 8 months since launching, from writing, booking, presentation, and the right people in charge. We are completely on board with this company, says Ivy League MVP. I'm excited for AEW also, okay? I want to see them succeed, but correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't it a few months ago, in some interviews that he was doing, he might have even tweeted about this, that Cody made it clear that they were not going to have any writers, there are no writers in AEW. What is this person even talking about? I'm thinking Ivy League MVP may have gotten his degree from Warrior University. By far the stupidest thing I saw all week. Actually, you know what? That was not the stupidest thing I saw all week. I'm sorry to say. I saw five things stupider than that, but that was pretty dumb. All Elite Wrestling news and notes. I am going to talk about the Moxley injury when I get to my all-out predictions in a few minutes. But first, Tony Schiavone has signed on with AEW. PW Insider first reported that there was interest from both WWE and AEW, and in the end, AEW won out. They later reported, they kind of amended their report, that per one of their sources, Bruce Pritchard had been the one in WWE lobbying to bring in Schiavone, and it was WWE's choice to end those discussions. They wanted to make it very clear, this source did, that it was not a case where they were outbid by AEW. Of course, that could just be WWE covering their ass so they don't look bad. Sounds like they wanted him because AEW wanted him. That's the only reason they wanted Tony Schiavone. And in the end, they didn't get him. Schiavone himself has talked about this on his show before. He has stated in the past that, you know, WWE has not had any interest in him whatsoever going back to 2001 when WCW first folded. You know, he's wanted even over the years at different points, or at least at one point, He wasn't lobbying, but he was looking maybe to do some work for them for the network, maybe hosting classic content and stuff like that. They may have thought he wanted to announce, which is not what he wanted to do. But even that, they ignored him. They rebuffed him. So it's rich that they would even think about bringing in Tony Schiavone and signing Tony Schiavone all of a sudden. It is very transparent why they would have wanted him. I hope Conrad's at least getting a decent fee out of all these signings. First Pritchard, then Bischoff, now Schiavone. You know what? I hope he starts a podcast with Jesse Ventura next. We need a bidding war to get Jesse back in the booth. He's still got that announcer voice. But I won't hold my breath. I saw an article where Conrad said that the podcast revolution is dead. So it was a good run, I guess. It was a good run. I guess I'll be packing up and going home. There's really nothing left to see here, I guess, if the podcast revolution is over now. Alex Golden Boy Mendez has also signed a contract with AEW, although we don't yet know what his role will be. Golden Boy stepped in to do commentary for their Fyter Fest show. I thought he was pretty good. He's an esports commentator by trade. That's what he does. And the whole Fyter Fest thing, you know, that I think that was either, there was some connection there, or it took place maybe at like a gaming convention or something. Anyway, that's why Golden Boy was involved in that show. But, you know, again, once I heard him on commentary, I thought he did a pretty good job. So between his signing, they've got Chris Van Vliet on board for at least the backstage interviews, I believe. And now Tony Schiavone, they have assembled a nice roster of announcing talent so far. Now, I have no idea if they plan to use Schiavone as an announcer at all on the TNT show, or if he'll have any involvement at all out next weekend. But I do like the idea, as we all ponder what role he might have, I do like the idea of maybe switching off the announcers. Like they, well, with WWE, I wish they could switch off the announcers, period. But I like the idea of switching off the announcers like they used to do on Nitro back in the day. And you have one announce team for hour one of the show and a second team for hour two. I had suggested years ago that they do that with Monday Night Raw when Raw first moved to 3 hours. First 90 minutes, you get one team. Second half of the show, you get another team. But, you know, with Schiavone here, it depends on what kind of commitment that they have made with him. He is still working for MLW, so he's going to be doing double duty. And I assume also he'll still be doing all of his, the Georgia Bulldogs and all the other minor league sports stuff that he does. But, you know, depending on his commitment, maybe you have like Schiavone and Golden Boy for hour one, and then you do JR and Excalibur for hour two. It's just an idea. The idea of Schiavone and JR together at the desk, maybe with a third person, that would be cool too, but to me it doesn't make a whole lot of sense because they're both play-by-play guys by trade. You could do it, but it just seems like their roles would be, if not identical, they would be very similar, so why have the two of them on the same team together? You know, now, where this leaves Alex Marvez remains to be seen. He may be right there on Saturday with JR and Excalibur. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. AEW television is coming next to Pittsburgh on October 23rd and Charleston, not South Carolina, but Charleston, West Virginia on October 30th. For what I hope, if you look at the calendar, October 30th, I hope, is a Halloween-themed show. I know Kenny Omega is hoping that they do one because he apparently has this great costume idea. The show on the 30th will also feature the finals of the AEW Tag Team Title Tournament, so that is when we will crown tag team champions for the very first time. The October 2nd show, which is the big live debut on TNT, that will actually not be AEW's debut on TNT. TNT is airing a one-hour special this week. So if you want to check it out, if you're not going to be around, set your DVR. Friday, August 30th at 10 p.m. Eastern, they're airing a one-hour special as an introduction of sorts ahead of the October debut and ahead of the pay-per-view on Saturday. So I imagine this is as much to promote All Out as anything else. And they may do more of these in the future when it comes to their big shows, ahead of their big shows, said to be similar to what UFC did for many years to hype up their pay-per-views. So that's coming up this Friday. So given that we are less than a week away from their All Out pay-per-view in Chicago, which is this upcoming Saturday, now would be a good time to run down the card and give my predictions. Unfortunately, we have to start with some terrible news a week out from the show, and that is that one half of the co-main event is now off the show completely. Jon Moxley was scheduled to wrestle Kenny Omega, stemming from the angle they did at Double or Nothing back in May, where Moxley debuted, he came out of the crowd, and he attacked Kenny Omega after his loss to Chris Jericho. And he attacked Jericho too, but he went after Omega, or Omega went after him, they were brawling, he gave Omega a double-arm DDT, face first, onto a tower of giant poker chips. Moxley went on to win the U.S. title from Juice Robinson in New Japan. He competed in his first G1 Climax, so he was the toast of the town this summer. It was all about Moxley. His name was hotter than it had been in years, and he was having a lot of success. And then he suffered an injury during the G1. This is not Moxley's first battle with this type of injury. It was said to be some kind of elbow injury. Unfortunately, it got infected. And what he is really battling right now is a staph infection. And this is not his first battle with MRSA, because after he had surgery for his torn triceps last year, he had to get a second surgery. This is why he was out for 9 months. He had to have a second surgery to clean out a staph infection in his arm that almost killed him. He said he almost died from that injury. MRSA is nothing to mess around with. You know, when I had him on the podcast many years ago, Bob Holly talked about how he almost lost his arm to a MRSA infection. Surgery didn't work. They had to put him on this last resort medication. I think it was vancomycin or something. That's considered the last resort. If that doesn't work, that ain't good news. Thankfully, in his case, it worked. Otherwise, they were going to have to amputate his arm from the shoulder down. All because John Laurinaitis said no hospital when Holly was complaining about not feeling well and there's something wrong. And, they were about to go on this overseas tour, I think, to Europe. And Laurinaitis insisted that he go. You'll get it checked out when you get back. And you've got to go on the overseas tour because we need you. We need you on the overseas tour. So he goes on the overseas tour. What happens? They proceed to put him in a battle royal every single night. Yeah, wow, they sure needed him. Thankfully, AEW is handling the situation a lot better than WWE did with Bob Holly. So he's been hurt for a few weeks now. Moxley insisted on wrestling Pentagon. He was scheduled for an independent wrestling match against Pentagon Jr. This was, I think, last week. He insisted on doing the match. He took no bumps on the elbow. On Friday, he took to his Twitter page. Word was starting to leak out. And he did something I think that was very smart and I'd like to see more wrestlers doing to cut down on the rumors and the BS, especially when it comes to their health. You know, if they just want to nip it in the bud. He went on Twitter and he made the announcement himself. He said, "I'm absolutely gutted to have to deliver the news, but I'd rather it come directly from me. In a nightmare scenario, a serious case of MRSA has returned in my elbow. Timing could not be worse. In this circumstance, I am forced to..." And this doesn't sound like Moxley. This is Moxley's person writing this. This just doesn't sound like Moxley. But anyway, "In this circumstance, I am forced to pull out of the fight 8:31 against Kenny Omega at All Out. I apologize to all involved, most importantly the fans. I am incredibly frustrated and pissed off. I'll have surgery this week to remove the bursa sac in my elbow and be done with it for good. Should be a quick recovery, so I will be 100% for AEW Wednesday nights on TNT. Still, I expect All Out to be an amazing pay-per-view and hope the fans looking for an alternative will tune in. You'll be blown away by AEW and be excited to be a wrestling fan. I am looking forward to watching as a fan myself." And then he ended with this, and this definitely sounds like Moxley. He says, "This fucking sucks." Doesn't get much more blunt than that. And the dude's health is the most important thing right now, and getting that taken care of, because like I said, that's nothing to play around with. So hopefully he gets better soon. If everything goes well, supposedly his doctor told him he'll be back in 4 weeks, which would be just in time for AEW on TNT. Let us hope that, you know, he can stick to that schedule, because that's a big bullet in the chamber that they have going into their TV debut. You know, Moxley is one of the biggest names that they've signed. And he can still do stuff. You know, if he can't get physical for a while and he can't wrestle, doesn't mean he can't be on TV. Unless he can't travel for some reason. He can certainly, you know, he's got that personality where you can have him raising hell and causing havoc on TV even if he's not wrestling. So it wouldn't be the end of the world if, you know, he couldn't get back in the ring right away. But hopefully that'll be taken care of quickly. AEW wasted no time in announcing a more than suitable replacement for Kenny Omega's opponent at the pay-per-view. Now, this person was supposedly scheduled to make a surprise appearance on the show anyway, but now he will be wrestling Kenny Omega, and that is Pac. Pac was originally scheduled to wrestle Hangman Page at Double or Nothing. Depending on who you believe, it was either a visa issue that prevented him from coming in for the show, or, more likely, it was a case where there were issues with him being the Dragon Gate champion and him not wanting to lose. He's very protective of them. He's got a loyalty to Dragon Gate. It's the first place where he reemerged after he left WWE. Like I said, he's very loyal to them and very much a fan of the promotion. And anyway, he has since lost the Dragon Gate Championship. He is no longer the champion. I guess he didn't want to lose and besmirch the title. Well, he's lost the title, so he is free and clear now to lose whoever they want him to lose to, if that's the outcome of the match. So whatever it was, that issue has been resolved, and he will be in Chicago. And I will say, I am as amped up for this match, if not more so, than I was even for Moxley and Omega. Omega and Pac sounds like a killer match, and now they can save Omega and Moxley for TNT if they want to. Blow it out with a big TV main event on week one, week two, you know, whichever week they want to do it. People are going to want to hopefully now see that match even more. Now, Pac has not been spared from injury either. He got hurt a few weeks ago. Pretty gruesome one if you saw the photo. It happened during an indie match in the UK at the beginning of the month. It looked like he had a hole in his leg, on his left thigh. There was this nasty, I call it a hole. It's a gash, I guess, but it's just this hole in his leg. I don't know how that happened. And I don't really care to go back and look at the photo again. But when I looked at the photo, I swear I saw bone sticking out. It was disgusting. So I take it they stitched him up and he's fine now if he's going to be wrestling. But that did not look like a fun injury at all. So hopefully that doesn't affect him in the match. So that's the update on the Moxley situation. That news came late in the afternoon on Friday. Later that night, at a big-time wrestling show in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, a show where Scott Steiner became their new heavyweight champion, Pentagon and Phoenix, the Lucha Bros, were wrestling. They were wrestling, well, how about this for a team? They were wrestling Juventud Guerrera and Teddy Hart. Phoenix superkicked Teddy Hart. He went to go pick up Juventud, and I guess his leg just buckled. He collapsed to the mat. He immediately grabbed his leg. He waved for help. They helped him to the back. Hoovy pinned Pentagon quickly. Pentagon rushed to the back to be with his brother and check up on him. There was a fear initially he may have broken his leg. You know, even Taya, I guess Taya was, I don't know if she was at the show, but she tweeted out, "Thank God, not a broken leg. I'm told he's okay. He's going to be fine." But there was a real fear that he may have broken his leg. Thankfully, he did not. And I believe he actually wrestled for them again last night. I actually didn't check the results, but I believe he was supposed to be back in the ring wrestling for them again last night. I didn't hear that he had any injury issues, so hopefully everything went well, and he seems to be okay. He should be fine for the pay-per-view next weekend. But for a while there was a bit of a scare. Like, what the hell's going on here? It comes in threes. First Moxley, and then Phoenix. Who's next? You know, Marco Stunt, I saw that stupid stunt where he jumped off a basketball rim in some gymnasium in front of 200 people. I mean, I guess he's not scheduled to be on the pay-per-view next weekend unless they put him in a match at the last minute, but that seemed awfully stupid for him to be doing. But, you know, Phoenix, he's in a ladder match next weekend. Ladder matches involve a lot of climbing. And in the case of Phoenix, I'm sure jumping from great heights and doing batshit crazy moves. So that was another scary situation that looks to have been averted. Let's run through the card here. I'll give my predictions. We have the buy-in pre-show with two matches. We have Private Party taking on Jack Evans and Angelico. It'll be all action, given who's involved. I'm not even going to bother trying to keep track of all the moves, but I predict a Private Party win. Going with Private Party to give them some momentum going into their tag team tournament match against the Young Bucks in week two of the TNT show. So I think you give him a win heading into, I mean, it's early to make predictions on that, I guess, but I would imagine that the Bucks probably go over on Private Party on TNT, but you never know. You never know. And we also have a 21-woman casino battle royale to crown one of two number one contenders to compete for the AEW Women's Championship, which will be decided on the first TNT show on October 2nd. So announced so far, I'm recording this on Sunday morning. As I am recording this, the names that have been announced so far, there'll be more during the week, are Jazz, Ivelisse, Brandi Rhodes, Britt Baker, Nyla Rose, Allie, Yuka Sakazaki, Teal Piper, the daughter of Rowdy Roddy Piper, Sadie Gibbs, and Ariel Monroe, who competed in the Mae Young Classic. Teal Piper, by the way, has signed on with WOW, the women of wrestling promotion. So she's doing the Battle Royal at the AEW show, but she's actually signed on with WOW. Do they call themselves WOW? Just WOW, right? They just call themselves WOW? That sounded weird. WOW. That's like me saying OMG. You wouldn't say that out loud because you'd sound like a douche. Anyway, so that leaves 11 more spots to be filled. Taylor Hendricks was teasing something on her social media. She may possibly end up getting one of those spots. Kylie Rae. Kylie Rae has been, she was on the first one or two AEW shows. She would come out. She almost came off as like their version of Bayley, right? She came out, she looked lovable and had a big smile on her face. And she's a good wrestler, but she has disappeared off the face of the earth. And there's something going on with her. I hope it's nothing too serious. It's a personal matter. I don't know if that's a medical thing. I don't know if there's something going on in her life that may be more important than wrestling right now. I mean, her Twitter's disappeared. Her Twitter's been gone now for a few weeks. And nobody seems to know what's going on with her. So I would take that to mean that it's a personal thing. And it would be nice to see her back here because that means everything's okay. So hopefully everything is okay. Who else here? I would think Awesome Kong and Aja Kong may occupy two more spots, given their face-off at the Fight for the Fallen show. I don't know if Aja Kong is being flown in for this or not. You know, it's hard to predict a match with 21 different people in it, especially when you literally don't know half of them. We still have half the spots unfilled in this match. So I'll give an early prediction on who I think is going to win. Britt Baker has been pushed very hard as one of the stars of the division. And they've had some media events, and they've sent out people like Cody and the Bucks, and Britt Baker was there with them. You know, so clearly they see her as being one of the centerpieces of their women's division. I'm going to go with Britt Baker to win the Battle Royal and get one of the spots to compete for the first ever AEW women's title. Awesome Kong, by the way, I mentioned her a moment ago. Awesome Kong is great on season 3 of GLOW on Netflix. I'm all caught up now on all 3 seasons. I love the most recent season. I saw one person was like, there's very little wrestling. They didn't think this season was good because there was very little actual wrestling. It's not a wrestling show. It's a show about wrestling, but it's a show about relationships and stuff. Wrestling is just sort of the backdrop. Nobody's watching GLOW to see great wrestling matches. So that's not how you should judge the show. You know, it's just kind of weird to see people complaining about it. I was hoping to see more wrestling on the show. It just seems like a weird criticism to me. I thought the show was great, and I think she's one of the highlights of it. Now, on the main card, we've got Hikaru Shida against Riho, two popular Joshi wrestlers. Shida and Riho were tag team partners in a Joshi Trios match at Double or Nothing. Shida picked up the win for her team. Here, they find themselves on opposite sides of the ring. I know AEW, especially Kenny Omega, is very high on the female talent from Japan. And I'm sure he was a big advocate for wanting to bring them into the company in the first place. And it's not hard to see why, especially if you watch that Trios match in May. These women are really good. And I think Riho is going to pick up the win this time. I'm picking her to win. And it would make sense for the winner of this match, and they haven't said anything about this, so I'm don't quote me on this as a fact, but it would seem to make sense to me. You've got the winner of the Battle Royal becoming a number one contender, that the winner of this match would become the other number one contender and would meet the winner of the Battle Royal on TNT to crown the first AEW Women's Champion. I don't know that that's going to happen, but that would seem to me to make sense. We've got the Dark Order against the Best Friends, Chucky T and Trent Beretta, with the winners getting a first-round bye in the tag team title tournament. I mean, that's got to be the heels, I would think. Isn't that usually a heel gimmick, right? The heels get the bye. They get the easy trip into the next round. Make the baby faces fight for it. We first saw the Dark Order show up at Double or Nothing. They attacked T and Beretta. And then at the Fight for the Fallen show, the Dark Order won a three-way over Angelico and Jack Evans and Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. So I'm picking the Dark Order to win. They get the bye into the next round. Joey Janela, Jimmy Havoc, and Darby Allin in a triple threat match. All I know is, in a triple threat match, there are no disqualifications, which means this match is going to get very crazy very quickly. So take your pick on which lunatic is going to win. I'm picking Joey Janela. Cody takes on Sean Spears with Tully Blanchard in his corner. It all boils down, as I see it, to whether or not they want this to continue beyond All Out. I think they do. I think they could keep this going for a while. And I think Sean Spears gets the win here. I predict a Sean Spears victory. I think he should get the win. And I would love it, and I don't even know if this is possible, but I spitball this out there. I would love it if Cody were to bring out Arn Anderson in his corner as a surprise to counteract Tully Blanchard being in the corner of Sean Spears. But then, as we approach the end of the match, Arn screws Cody, maybe even lays him out with a spine buster. He screws over Cody Rhodes and helps give the win to Sean Spears, because the Horseman will always fuck over the Rhodes family. You've got to keep that tradition going. Horsemen reunite. But again, I don't know. You know, Arn Anderson has said he's got a severance package with WWE. He can't say anything, go anywhere, do anything until that's run out. And supposedly that will not run out or expire until after All Out. Whether it's September or October, I don't know. So unfortunately, it just may not logistically even be possible. But damn, I would love for that. Now, I've kind of like talked it into my head now, where if it doesn't happen, I'm going to be disappointed. But that's my dumb fault for even thinking about it. But what a great moment that would be. Arn comes out. It's like Jim Neidhart. You know, Bret Hart had Jim Neidhart in his corner, brought him back at the King of the Ring in 94. And they did this whole elaborate swerve where, in the end, Anvil only came back for Owen. He didn't come back for Bret. He just wanted to see Owen beat Bret to win the championship. You know, it's not like we haven't seen the Horsemen swerve people, and, you know, they did it with Sting, and, you know, again, they were a thorn in Dusty's side for so long. Have Arn come out and then turn on Cody and reunite here with Tully and Spears, that'd be pretty cool. So then we get the ladder match for the AAA Tag Team titles with the Lucha Bros, Pentagon, and Phoenix defending against the Young Bucks. The Bucks beat the Lucha Bros at Double or Nothing. They beat them again in a six-man tag at Fyter Fest. Pentagon and Phoenix won back the AAA Tag Team titles in Mexico. I hope Phoenix is good to go, because you know he's going to do something crazy, and he may not be. He may not be good to go when this match is over. I think the Lucha Bros blow this thing off with a win over the Bucks, and they retain their AAA Tag Team titles. Then we have Kenny Omega. I wrote Penny Omega in my notes here. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Maybe Penny is his bizarro twin sister who hates video games. Kenny Omega against Pac, replacing the staph-infected John Moxley. Omega lost to Chris Jericho at Double or Nothing. He then beat Shima at the, was it Fyter Fest or Fight for the Fallen? These shows kind of all run together. Might have been Fight for the Fallen, but he beat Shima in his last match. Because of my prediction for the main event, which I'll get to here in a second, I think Kenny Omega wins this match. We also, by the way, we don't know if Pac is in for good or if he's only in for this one match. So, even more so, if he's only in for the one match, I don't see him winning here. So I'm picking Kenny Omega to get the win. I think because he will be positioned first. First in line for a shot at the AEW World title. So, yes, it is Pac's first AEW match, but I think he loses. And this may be the match I'm honestly looking forward to the most on the show. You know, with the replacement in there against Kenny Omega, I just think this is going to be a killer match. You know, AEW did a hell of a job turning a negative into a positive with this booking. Which leads us to Chris Jericho. taking on Hangman Adam Page to crown the first ever AEW World Champion. Adam Page did a sit-down interview, and they aired at least snippets of it during episode 7 of their Road to All Out series, which has been very well produced. They did this for Double or Nothing. You know, the stuff and the features that they put together on their YouTube channel so far have been top-notch. And I've said that before, and they deserve a lot of praise for it. Because I think it really helps, especially going into a big event like this. They don't have TV. They have to lean on and rely on that YouTube channel to get everybody caught up on storylines. And, you know, if this guy's going to cut a promo on this guy, where's it going to air? Right? If not for the YouTube channel. So they've done a good job before the TNT debut in making that YouTube channel a very important tool in promoting these shows. And the Road to All Out series is part of that. And on episode 7, he sat down, Paige did, with JR. And he did an interview that was eerily similar to another sit-down interview that Jim Ross conducted many, many years ago. 18 years ago. With Stone Cold and The Rock leading up to WrestleMania 17. This is before Austin turned heel and won the championship at WrestleMania. Much like Austin in that interview here, Hangman said over and over, he looked dead at Jim Ross, and he said over and over, I need to win this. I have to win this. And just the way he said it reminded me of Austin in that interview all those years ago. Now, I'm not saying Hangman now has to go heel, just like Austin did, but he's got friends, right? He's got the Elite. Maybe he gets some help. I just think it throws an interesting little wrinkle into things when trying to predict a winner here. And if you didn't see it, by the way, go back and watch it because, you know, it's one of the best interviews that Hangman has done. You know, when Hangman came out as a surprise at the House of Glory show in New York a few weeks ago, you know, when I was there at ringside and his music hit, and he came out and the place exploded and he got in the ring at the HOG show and he cut a promo. And I'm listening to him speak in front of this crowd that's going nuts for him. And, you know, yeah, it's not 10,000 people, but he came off like a total superstar. If he can channel that aura and that could, you know, kind of transfer its way over to TV, you know, he could be one of the bigger stars that they have on that roster. Just watching those last couple of promos I've seen him do, he's got it in him. He's not a bad promo at all. He can speak, you know, and he's got that fire. But with Jericho beating Omega at Double or Nothing, you know, I think Chris Jericho wins. I think Chris Jericho wins the AEW championship. And Kenny Omega then gets his shot at redemption, eventually getting his win back and being the one to then take the title. When, I don't know, but being the one to take the title from Chris Jericho. But Jericho first has to win the title to then lose it later on. So I think Jericho becomes the first champion. Adam Page is good. He's very good. But I just think it's too soon for that big crowning moment. Jericho, look, win or lose, Jericho loses nothing. He's Teflon. Hangman could be a made man in one night. You know, I get that. And then you could do the big pyro and confetti celebration to end the show on a happy note heading into TV. But I would put the title on Chris Jericho. I think it's the right move to make. And actually, we do know when the first AEW title defense is going to be. They've already announced it will take place on episode 3 on TNT on October 16th. So we actually do already have a date for that first title defense. Could they do Jericho and Omega on that show with some kind of a screwy finish and then lead to one more match, maybe where they change the title in December? Are they doing a pay-per-view in December? I'm not even sure. I thought maybe they would be. I guess we'll see. So there's one other question lingering over the show. Will CM Punk make an appearance? If you put me on the spot and you ask me the question, do I think we see CM Punk on the show on Saturday? My answer is no. I do not believe we will see CM Punk on this pay-per-view. Obviously, he's going to be in Chicago. I mean, he lives in Chicago. I think he lives in Chicago still. I know for a while when he was training, I think he was basically living in a different state. But he is Chicago-based, and he will be at StarCast next weekend. We know that. But I don't believe that there is some sort of secret deal that's been negotiated that they're keeping under wraps. It would be huge for for them if they could pull it off, especially, you know, heading into TV. Boy, it would sure be good for them to have CM Punk in their stable. But my prediction is no, there will be no CM Punk. And I agree, you know, some people have said publicly that if you just kind of go into the show and you base everything around Punk is going to be a surprise, he's going to come out and he's going to, you know, attack somebody or do something, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. Don't do that. It's like me with the Arn Anderson thing in the Cody match. Don't do that. Don't set yourself up for something that probably has very little chance of actually happening. I will be going live on YouTube when the pay-per-view is over on Saturday night. So I'm not waiting until the podcast on Sunday. There will be a podcast next Sunday. But I will be doing a live stream review of the AEW show when it goes off the air next Saturday night. So join me. And yes, there will still, as I said, be episode 615 the next day. So that's going to be a busy weekend. Because remember, on Saturday, there's two other big shows going on. NXT UK is having a takeover show that I'm sure I will not have time to watch. And there's a New Japan show taking place, the Royal Quest show in London, which I would very much like to check out. And I hope to at some point. I just don't know when that will be. So I am pretty much just laser focused on All Out next weekend. And that is what we will talk about. Vince McMahon was not backstage at Raw last Monday as he was preparing to announce the names and logos of all the XFL teams this week. So it was Triple H and Paul Heyman running the show in his absence. And speaking of the XFL, we now know all eight cities and team names, along with descriptions for each that when you hear them, you would think they were for a Lord of the Rings movie. If Vince McMahon wrote the script, and I'm sure Frodo would do nothing but tell poop jokes. So let's run through the list, because these are just too good to pass up. I shall do my best here and try to use my most dramatic voice as I describe each one of these eight teams. First up, we have the Dallas Renegades, which appears to have an illustration of Darkman as its logo, and it's probably, I will say, probably the coolest logo out of all of them, but looks like Darkman. I mean, all of these logos are fine. Some of them are on the generic side. But here's the description. Deep in the heart of Texas beats a different kind of pulse, a spirit untamed. A swagger that can't be denied. Where big meets bold meets badass. This is outlaw country inside the lines. This is hell on wheels between hash marks. This is their home on the range. The Dallas Renegades raising hell. This is ridiculous. We have the Houston Roughnecks. Resolute. Rippling with heat. Railing against fatigue. Unceasing and often unseen, they labor deep in the trenches, mercenaries in the muck, brawlers in blackened dirt, not just for 3 hours. What is this, Raw? Railing against fatigue? That sounds like the fans. Not just when the lights are bright. These are the scratching, grinding, never-bending few. The Houston Roughnecks, going to work for you. It actually rhymes. Look at that. Edgar Allan McMahon over here. This guy's writing poetry. As if he's writing this himself. Next is the Los Angeles Wildcats. In the land of bright lights, far from flash and fame, they've already begun to prowl. Enter their den and be dominated. Run away and be ripped apart. This is prime time meets primal instinct. This is showtime with a snarl. This is our time to roar. The LA Wildcats unleashed. Then we get to my town. The New York Guardians. Centuries carved of stone. Watchdogs over the metropolis, like Batman, these guys are. A prehistoric predator. A beast evolves, turned loose in a new kind of jungle. All teeth and talons, eyes unblinking, they know fear because they feed off it. They are your first line of defense, and there is no need for a second. The New York Guardians, on duty, February 2020. Well, at least it's not the New York, New Jersey Guardians, like the last time when it was the Hitmen. I still have my sign laying around here somewhere. I know I've tweeted out a picture of it before. It's not even a banner. It's like it's a sign in the shape of a football for the New York, New Jersey Hitmen. Plus, I have a little XFL mini football. Might be worth something one day. Don't laugh. Don't laugh. I might be able to buy myself a ciabatta sandwich with that money. We have the St. Louis Battlehawks. Winged warriors preparing for flight. Preparing to fight. They await their orders, then attack as one. Diving, dodging, swooping, striking. Their mission? Create chaos. This sounds like the fucking pigeons that have been crapping all over my car. There's one reason to hate this team. Their mandate. Win at all costs. The St. Louis Battlehawks cleared to engage. And we have the Tampa Bay Vipers. In the shadows they wait. Demons born in darkness. Hunters by instinct. Cold-blooded by nature. Their bite unavoidable. Their grip inescapable. They slither and stalk their competition, luring all who challenge them into the jaws of defeat. The Tampa Bay Vipers ready to strike. Why, oh why, would you put another sports team in Tampa Bay? Every major team struggles to get people out to games down there. The Buccaneers don't do well. I mean, they don't play well either, so that's part of it. But the Bucs don't do well. Baseball games don't do well. You know where the Rays rank? The Tampa Bay Rays? I had a look at it. I knew they did badly, but I wanted to see how badly. Do you know where they rank this season in attendance out of 30 major league teams? 29. A few months ago, they tried offering $5 tickets, and that didn't work. I doubt the Vipers are going to be packing them in either. Yeah, every time I hear the Vipers, I just can't help but think of one of the greatest episodes of The Sopranos. When Tony and Christopher jack those wine bottles from the biker gang. It's like they got their guns pointed on them and the biker gang guy goes, "Hey pal, you're fucking with the Vipers." Then later on, like, Tony and Christopher, they're at dinner. And they're laughing about the whole experience and stealing the wine and everything. And Tony's mocking one of the gang members. "We're with the Vipers, we're with the Vipers." Oh, the look on his face when he says it, I laugh every time. Yeah, every now and then I go down the rabbit hole on YouTube of Sopranos clips. I don't mean to, it just sort of happens, and I turn around and it's an hour later and I'm still watching clips. With the Vipers. The Seattle Dragons, rising from the turbulent sea beneath the darkening skies of their weather-hardened home. Relentless, ruthless, ravenous, not of mythology but of muscle and might. Not of folklore, but of football. This is your darkest fantasy. In cleats. My darkest fantasy. What is this, 50 Shades of Grey? The Seattle Dragons, breathing fire. And finally, the DC Defenders. On the shoulders of giants, they stand tall, unconquerable, unyielding. Marching ever forward, a force united. One quest, one purpose, one resolve. Seeking glory through grit, victory through valor, the DC Defenders taking their stand. This man is going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars. But if his new play toy keeps him distracted, then I'm all for it. I am all for it. I will be Homer Simpson with the XFL hat and my little XFL flag in my hand. Raw last Monday night was in St. Paul, Minnesota. Twitter poll, over 2,600 votes, 38% thumbs up, 13% thumbs down, 49% did not watch. Vic Joseph stepped in on commentary for Corey Graves, who was away on vacation with Carmella. This man is a giant. He absolutely towers over Cole and Renee.
Oh my God!
I thought he did a fine job. Wouldn't mind hearing more from him. They open the show with Roman Reigns beating Dolph Ziggler. Surprise, surprise. Fun finish with Reigns spearing him in midair, but the fact that it took Goldberg less than 2 minutes to beat Dolph Ziggler at SummerSlam, and the next night on Raw, it took The Miz less than 5 minutes to beat Dolph Ziggler, but it took Roman Reigns 10 minutes to beat the same Dolph Ziggler is completely ludicrous. There's a logic gap in there somewhere, that it takes their supposed top dog that much longer to put this guy down when others were able to make short work of him. I thought the Becky Lynch promo backstage was great. She said 4 months ago, Sasha Banks ran away crying. Her career was cold as ice. Cut to last week, she's hotter than ever after attacking the man. Sasha Banks is the greatest woman on the roster to never be great. I love that line. Whoever came up with that, I love that line. I do notice more people, as Becky did here, looking directly into the camera as they speak in these backstage promos. Maybe that's a Paul Heyman thing. I don't know. Whoever's thing it is, I hope they keep doing it. Jerry Lawler was in the ring for a King's Court where he was scheduled to interview Sasha Banks, but the lights started to flicker and go out, and Lawler is not dumb. He knew right away what that meant. That meant The Fiend was coming. So he got out of Dodge and he walked up the ramp, but when the lights came back on, kind of, they put like a spotlight on Lawler. The Fiend slowly rose behind him. He slowly popped up like a horror movie villain from behind Jerry Lawler, and he put him in the mandible claw. I love this. I love the idea that you never know when or where The Fiend may strike. They try to keep it unpredictable, which is one of the reasons why he should not be on television every single week. And I am thinking, because here was another legend in a growing line of legends that The Fiend has been attacking. I'm thinking the next legend for him to attack may well be The Undertaker. The Undertaker is now being advertised to appear on the September 10th episode of SmackDown from Madison Square Garden. That's what happens when tickets aren't selling well. You get The Undertaker to come in. So if they do decide to do another Undertaker-Bray Wyatt match, and I have no idea if they are, but if that was a direction they wanted to go in, you know, The Fiend has to win. Not only does The Fiend have to win, The Fiend has to win, and there then has to be no rematch. He just moves on to his next victim. I'd be okay with that if they actually use The Undertaker this time to put over the closest thing that we've got now to an Undertaker type of character. I was going to say supernatural. I guess to a degree you could say supernatural, but I don't know that he has any magical powers. He's just a very disturbed individual. But you know, that dark type character. We don't really have anybody like that except for the Wyatt character now, and that's the closest thing to an Undertaker type persona that we have, you know, in the company right now, that can scare little kids. So if they want to use the Undertaker in that regard, then by all means go ahead and do so. I'd be okay with that. You know, The Fiend putting the Undertaker down in the mandible claw at MSG would be a hot angle. Or if the Undertaker is going to be among the legends that are going to be on that 20th anniversary of SmackDown show October 4th when they move to Fox, I suppose they could do it there. Is Undertaker even being advertised for that show? I've seen conflicting reports about that, but you know, maybe they want to do it there and not at MSG. I mean, they have the option. But I know it's been all Hall of Famer so far that Wyatt has been going after first Mick Foley, then Kurt Angle, now Jerry Lawler. Undertaker, he'll be a Hall of Famer, he just isn't in yet. But if he's going to be appearing, then I say why not? I mean, what else would Undertaker be doing other than, okay, he's going to show up and chokeslam some scrub? Oh, wow, okay. We haven't seen that before. I mean, I don't think, somebody asked me this question a few weeks ago, you know, do you think The Fiend is or should he be going down the line of all the people that beat him and wronged him in the past? John Cena and Roman Reigns? No, I don't think he has to do that. I don't think you need to dredge up all those old bad memories. I think that Bray Wyatt, for the most part, should be left in the past. But if The Undertaker is going to be there, then why not? Why not? Booker T was this week's guest on Skype. Did they, like, buy a stake in Skype or something? Like, yeah, you know, they gave up on Tout. I know that. Tout didn't work out. So maybe they bought into Skype instead. First Steve Austin, now Booker T. Booker talked about Jerry Lawler being attacked in the segment before. by the Fiend. They should have had the Fiend pop up behind Booker in his house and attack him. Or the radio station. It may not have been his house. Although his home would have been creepier. Then you hear Charmel screaming in the background. Wherever he was, there was this... it was almost like a clear glass partition behind Booker as he was sitting at the table looking into his webcam. So you saw that partition in the background, but it looked almost like this clear... I don't know if it was glass or what it was. Plexiglass, maybe. How creepy would it have been, as Booker is talking, to see the Fiend's reflection behind the partition? Then he disappears. Then he pops up behind Booker and he puts the claw on Booker. Oh well. That would have been cool. Booker picked Drew McIntyre to win the King of the Ring because Booker is a smart man and he knows what's up. My King of the Ring brackets have been busted already, but my pick to win remains the same. I am with Booker. I think Drew McIntyre is going to win the entire thing. In the first round, Samoa Joe beats Cesaro. Just a good physical match between these two, as you would expect. Right from the opening bell, soon as the bell rang, Cesaro sprinted across the ring. A running uppercut that almost knocked Joe into the middle of next week. And then later on, it was Cedric Alexander with a win over Sami Zayn, whose career has just hit the skids, it seems, at the moment. It seems the moment that he mentioned the initials AEW in that promo on Monday Night Raw, his career hit the skids. And I'm sure, look, I said at the time, I'm sure it was planned. Everybody was buying into it. Oh, maybe he went off on his own and said that. I don't buy that for a second. I still believe it was planned. But looking back on it now, I don't know. Kind of makes me wonder a little bit. Because his career has just gone downhill ever since. Rey Mysterio was backstage with Chuck and talked about how rough it has been for him of late. He said Andrade ripped his mask off and disgraced him, and his body hasn't been holding up as well as he would have hoped. And the time eventually comes for all of us. And he said it's time for him to hang up the mask and let the next generation take his place. He goes to unmask, like it's 20 years ago at Super Brawl. All of a sudden, his son Dominic swoops into camera view and he stops him. And one of my followers on Twitter, Dick Johnson, said, I challenge you to read Dominic's lines with more emotion than he did on Raw. You could put in minimal effort and sound like Marlon Brando relative to Dominic. Look, I mean, the kid is not an experienced actor. And I didn't think he was... Look, he wasn't good, but I didn't think he was that bad either. But you challenged me. So, challenge accepted. In fact, I'm going to read this as Marlon Brando.
You've been there for me my whole life. Just hear me out, okay? You told me that when I debuted, I would debut as your partner. When you trained with your uncle, you said that you weren't going to change a thing when you trained me. You got to step in the ring with the first generation Mysterio. I want to be able to tell my children that I was a partner with their grandfather, my father, the great Rey Mysterio. Don't do this. Stay in WWE. Don't retire. I'm gonna make you proud.
Dominic made him an offer that he couldn't refuse. So Rey lives to fight another day. I actually like that. I like Dominic taking on this role as the Godfather. I think it could work for him. He just has to work on his emotion a little bit. So Rey might get a nice send-off after all, instead of being jobbed out into oblivion. WWE wants Dominic to wrestle. He'll get his chance soon. Question is, who do they face? Who faces the father and son combo of Rey Mysterio and Dominic? I was thinking, you know, maybe Andrade. Keep this issue going with Rey and Andrade, but then who else? Andrade and who? Joe? Yeah, it feels like a dead issue now. So I was thinking, and don't call me crazy, you know who would actually fit into this? Whether it's just feuding with Rey and you know, kind of bullying his son or even teaming up for a match with Andrade. Baron Corbin. I think Baron Corbin could be a good fit for that spot. I really do. It's a hell of a lot better than him fighting for the championship. You know, he's a bully. He's a dick on television, right? Plays that role pretty well. Why not? Why not? New Day against the Revival. We got a DQ finish with Randy Orton flying in for the RKO on Big E. Kofi comes down. He tries to make the save. He too gets an RKO. And then Xavier Woods gets the assisted RKO with some help from the Revival, which was pretty cool. I'm liking this trio of Orton and the Revival. I like it. I want to see where it goes. Orton is holding Kofi down. You know, we talked about how he, metaphorically speaking, 10 years ago, held Kofi down. Well, here on this show, he literally, physically, held Kofi down and made him watch the Revival try to break his friend's leg. Fear not, though, because according to WWE, despite what happened here and despite the shrieks and screams of horror from Xavier Woods and fears that he may have broken his leg in this angle, according to WWE, Xavier is not cleared to wrestle, but he is still well enough to travel and make all of his media obligations. Well, how convenient. How convenient. Michael Cole tried to interview Sasha Banks. He tried to do so without yelling "boss time" every 5 seconds. I don't know how he did it, but he was able to contain himself. But instead answering questions, Sasha just talked about her blue hair. See, I also tune Michael Cole. I don't blame Sasha Banks. I also tune out Michael Cole during these things because they just script the lamest dialogue for him that just sounds completely unnatural. So I don't blame her. But they did not have Sasha Banks on the show give an explanation as to why she did what she did the week before to Natalya. And I'm okay with that. I say you want to build the suspense a little bit more until they do a sit down or some serious promo in the ring where she just, you know, lets loose and speaks her mind. That's fine with me. Not everything has to be rushed a week later. As long as there's some kind of explanation in the end, I'm okay with that. Now, later in the show, Natty was in the back. Her arm was in a sling, I think, still, and she was cutting a promo. Also looking directly into the camera, which is good. And Sasha attacks, again, and attacks her arm. I think she slammed it in a door. And she looks down at Natty, and she says, "Go to hell, Natty, and tell your daddy I said hi." I don't like them having her say that any more than I did when Randy Orton told Rey Mysterio that Eddie's in hell, or when Paige mocked Charlotte's dead brother. I think it's cheap, and I just think it's unnecessary. You know, when I thought about Sasha Banks finally going heel after all these years, going heel again, I didn't sit here and think, you know what she needs to do? Because this woman just can't get over as a heel on her own. So what can we do? What does she have to do to get over as a heel? Oh, I know. We'll have her talk about Jim the Anvil Neidhart being in hell. Stupid. Stupid shit. Alexa Bliss, and here's the other reason why it's stupid, by the way, because you're going to get the idiots who go, "Oh, Solomonster, you know, you want people to be a heel and you don't want them to be a heel." This is not about being a heel and not being able to be a heel in 2019, okay? Hey, I'm on board. There's a lot of things that I think people get very upset about and very offended by. There's a lot of people out there who wouldn't know what to do with themselves if they had nothing to get offended by in the first place. That doesn't qualify here. Because think about it. If you want to look at it from a realistic perspective, for Sasha Banks to turn around and say something like that, does that sound realistic to you? All of a sudden, she would turn around and say something like that? I mean, it's totally believable that she would turn on Natty and turn on her friends and want to get ahead and all that kind of stuff. But they just do this for the sake of doing it. It's cheap. It's cheap. It's not as offensive to me. No, it's not my father she's saying that about. But it's just cheap. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross beat Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. Not a good match, but at least the champs got a win. More than I could say for the Iconics when they had those titles. And Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman took on Anderson and Gallows for the Raw Tag Team titles. This after Strowman's match with AJ Styles earlier in the night got thrown out. And Seth Rollins made the save for the big guy, just as Strowman did for him the week before, and so they decided to team up to challenge for the tag team titles. Seth was good here, hot tag to Braun. Braun runs wild, some shoulder tackles. He gives Carl Anderson a power slam. AJ tried to interfere, but Rollins caught him with a stomp. I thought that was cool. And Strowman pinned Anderson to win the tag team titles. Crowd loved it. Crowd went wild for it. I didn't mind it, even though we've seen this countless times before. As they were celebrating on stage, Strowman leered at the Universal title that Seth was holding up and basically put Rollins on notice without saying a word. He said it with his eyes that he was putting this man on notice that he's coming for his championship. Rollins and Strowman will soon be the feuding tag team champions, I predict, until Nicholas attacks Rollins in an act of jealousy. And then Nicholas will manage Braun Strowman all the way to his first Universal title. Since Braun has not had a lot of luck winning it on his own, maybe with the expertise of Nicholas in his corner, he'll finally find some success. Now, before I get to SmackDown, I gotta tell you guys, the new NFL season is upon us. Antonio Brown is on the Raiders. Le'Veon Bell is with my hometown New York Jets. Odell Beckham, no longer a Giant, is in Cleveland. One thing that has not changed, like last year when you heard me talk about it, is where a lot of you will be putting your money down on all of the games. MyBookie is the place to bet on football each weekend. They have better bonuses and more prop bets than any other sportsbook, period. This year, MyBookie is hosting the first online handicapping super contest. First place is guaranteed to win at least $100,000, and it only costs $100 to enter. All you got to do is pick five NFL games against the spread every week to climb the leaderboard and score your share of the huge cash prize pool. They have live in-game betting on every NFL game, plus the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. MyBookie is always the right play. You bet, you win, they pay. It's very simple. Sign up now and get up to $1,000 first deposit bonus. Double your first deposit. Use the promo code SOLOMONSTER to activate the offer. Just visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And use the promo code SOLOMONSTER when creating your account to claim the bonus. You bet, you win, you get paid. MyBookie. SmackDown Live from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Twitter poll over 2,700 votes. 29% thumbs up, 17% thumbs down, 54% did not watch. I hated the stuff that they did on this show with Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. So much so that it just ruined the entire show for me. Owens is in the back in Shane's makeshift office, begging him, practically all but being on his hands and knees, begging him to reconsider, to lift the $100,000 fine from the week before. Shane says he'll consider it. Shane says, I need to hear an apology from you for what you did putting your hands on a WWE official. The one thing I haven't heard from you is an apology. So Kevin Owens apologizes. Not to the referee that he beat up. He apologizes to Shane McMahon. Now you would think that, you know, in storyline here, Owen should know that this man is what he is, which is a liar, and he's just going to turn around and put the knife right in his back. But of course, he's either too stupid or too afraid. Two qualities that really don't fit in a top babyface. He cowers in fear. I guess to him, Shane McMahon is a man who can be reasoned with. He's a man of honor. He'll do the right thing. God knows the last 8 or 9 months, we've seen that from Shane McMahon, right? Going back even before WrestleMania, even before he turned on The Miz, calling himself the best in the world. So Kevin Owens apologizes to Shane McMahon and then extends his hand to shake his hand. And Shane says, I'm not quite there yet, Kevin. And Owens just says, okay, no problem. And he walks off. You would watch this segment, and if you didn't know any better, you would think that Shane McMahon was the babyface and Kevin Owens was the heel. If you took a fan from a year ago who is trapped in a time capsule, and you drop them in 2019, and they watch this segment, or any of the segments between these two on this show, backstage, that is exactly what you would think. You would think that Owens was the heel, and that Shane McMahon was still a babyface. Unbelievable. Kevin Owens came across like a total loser on this show. This was the equivalent of 1,000 Stephanie McMahon slaps. And to top it all off, to the surprise of no one except Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon comes down during Owens' King of the Ring match against Elias at the end of the show. He reveals a referee shirt, sends the referee out. Now he's going to be the referee. Owens goes for a stunner to Elias. Elias shoves him off. Owens stops short of slamming into Shane because Shane had warned him earlier that you are not to intentionally assault a WWE official again or else you could be fired. So he stops short. Elias then rolls up Kevin Owens and Shane fast counts him to give Elias the win. And Kevin Owens has been eliminated from the King of the Ring tournament. Those segments backstage were some of the most counterproductive segments that they have done all year. They're lucky that Kevin Owens is beloved by as many people as he is beloved by, and in a few weeks, none of this will probably even matter. But in a vacuum, you watch this show, and he could not have come across as more of a loser if they tried. The man who inherited the Stone Cold Stunner. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. If this is their way, you know, look, not everybody is necessarily going to be an anti-authority babyface like Steve Austin or The Rock or some of these people were in their career. With Owens, it would seem to me like they're trying to play on this whole everyman thing, right? Everybody can relate. Kevin Owens has a family. He's got a wife. He's got kids. He's got to look out for his family. He's got to swallow his pride. He's got to do the right thing. He comes across as a loser. I still can't believe that they did that. I cannot believe that they thought that was a good idea. So the other King of the Ring match we had on SmackDown was Andrade Cien Almas advancing over Apollo Crews to the surprise of no one. A good little match, but the outcome was never in doubt. There's no drama there at all. Kayla Braxton's in the back. She's interviewing Chad Gable about his upcoming King of the Ring match, which I believe might be taking place on TV this week, with Shelton Benjamin and having to overcome obstacles in his career. Yeah, you don't say. So while this is going on in the background, the locker room door opens and Shelton Benjamin comes out. And Shelton puts a sign on Gable's door and he slinks off without Gable even knowing he was there. Gable wraps up the interview. And he turns around and he looks at the sign, and the sign has a line of demarcation. It says, "You must be this tall to enter the King of the Ring." And of course, Gable's head doesn't even come up to it. And this got a good laugh out of a part of the audience. If the idea is for Chad Gable to be bullied about his size, and then he comes out in his matches and he does all these impressive power moves and chaos theories, the shit out of people, that's cool. And I think that'll get over. But if they just play on the whole he's short, let's call him Shorty G. Please, for the love of God, do not name him Shorty G. It is death. Please, don't do it. We had a Miz TV segment with Sami Zayn. And Sami says, you know, look, I got some things I got to get off my chest here. Miz is mocking him for just losing all of his matches and just being a total loser. Wouldn't be the first one on this show. And Sami says, you know, he's succeeded by fighting for bigger causes in his life that are bigger than just himself. He likes helping others. He's going to help somebody on the WWE roster. Which is kind of weird because the guy who came out that he's going to help happens to be the Intercontinental Champion. You would think the Intercontinental Champion would not need a lot of help, but he's not wrong. Because even though he is the champion, he could use a lot of help. So out comes Nakamura, and there's a history there between these two, going back to Nakamura's debut in NXT. Takeover in Dallas. I was there for that match. Hell of a match. Hell of a crowd, hell of a night. Sami Zayn against Shinsuke Nakamura. So there's a history there between the two of them. There's a bond, as Sami Zayn says, between the two of them. And Nakamura attacked The Miz. He laid him out with a Kinshasa. And at the end of all this, Sami and Nakamura are standing tall. This was completely out of left field. But you know what? On the surface, I like the pairing. Are they going to give up on them in a month? Yes, probably they will. But for now, it's their new toy to play with. I like the pairing. Sami was just drowning on television when he was actually on television. Nakamura is the Intercontinental Champion and was not much better off than Sami Zayn was. What does that tell you? The other good thing about this is, look, Nakamura, he can speak English, but not great. And that's going to work against him in WWE. That's just a fact. I'm not saying it's right, but clearly it has worked against him. If he was able to speak English better, communicate better, I guarantee you he'd be getting more opportunities than he's been getting. So by putting Sami Zayn with him, it gives him a mouthpiece, which he clearly needed, because they're only going to do so much with Nakamura without one. So for those reasons, I think both guys could really benefit from this. And Sami Zayn kind of serving as the Mr. Perfect to Nakamura's Ric Flair could work. We had a very good match between Buddy Murphy and Daniel Bryan. Buddy Murphy pulling off the upset win. A huge win for Murphy, coming off his loss to Roman Reigns. Bryan and Rowan attacked him backstage after the match. To me, it doesn't matter. It's like, oh, they took away, you know, they negated his big win. No, they didn't. It wasn't a big deal at all. He still won. He got the win. And he won decisively. He didn't win on a distraction roll-up. He didn't win on some fluky finish. He won with his finish. He won with Murphy's Law. And he pinned Daniel Bryan, the man who only months ago was on WrestleMania defending the WWE title. So now, can he do the same against Mustafa Ali and the King of the Ring? Can he get a win, or will Bryan and Rowan get their revenge by costing Murphy the match the way that Shane did to KO here on this show? Sending Ali on to face Elias in the next round. Maybe they even come out and attack Ali. You know, Bryan comes down and gives Ali a running knee, or Rowan comes in, gives him the claw thing and slams him, because if they attack Ali, Ali gets the win by DQ. That's their way of screwing over Murphy. I could see that too. My money would be on that. Can I place my bet with my bookie on that? Because that's what I would do. That's how I think that's going to play out. And then we had the ending. After teasing throughout the show, throughout the week, that they were going to reveal the culprit who has been trying to murder Roman Reigns instead of going to the cops. Daniel Bryan and Rowan, who I guess now is back to being Eric Rowan, according to his profile on WWE.com, so maybe soon we'll get Mustafa Ali back. But they put a sheet over this person's head, and they had him sitting there at a table for 2 hours in the back, until finally Roman Reigns showed up. And he casually strolled in, Bryan pulled the sheet off the guy's head to reveal a bad create-a-wrestler version of Rowan. Same bald head, same orange beard. Looked a little bit older in the face, maybe he could pass for Rowan's father or something. Obviously, what's going on here is Daniel Bryan is stalling until we all find out that he was the one responsible. And I say that this was a terrible segment. The quicker we get this nonsense over with, the quicker we can get to Roman Reigns against Daniel Bryan, which should be a pretty good match. But this was stupid. This was stupid. And they left the camera on Roman Reigns, just standing there. He didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. He just stood there with a stupid look on his face. And they do this stupid thing where they have the camera linger for 5 to 10 seconds too long. They have a habit of doing this. I'm convinced they do it on purpose and they get a laugh out of it. Just stood there with this uncomfortable look on his, this uncomfortably long stretch of time until they finally went off the air. The Bryan and Murphy match on this show was very good. I would say check that out if you didn't see it. And I like the pairing of Sami Zayn and Shinsuke Nakamura. A little confusing, but I think it could work. I think it could end up making sense for both guys. Other than that, this show was a misfire. Not a fan of this show. NXT this week, we had Undisputed Era open the show to vent with, they should get a podcast, with Roderick Strong complaining that it was not he but Pete Dunne who Velveteen Dream pinned at TakeOver Toronto, and therefore, he is still gunning for Dream's North American Championship. Bill O'Reilly and Bobby Fish had a similar... Kyle O'Reilly did. Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. Holy shit, where did that come from? what a team that would be. So it was Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, and they showed footage from TakeOver and their match with the Street Profits that clearly shows a blind tag was made and the Illegal Man was pinned in their match for the tag team titles. They wanted William Regal to do his job, do the right thing. And in fact, later in the show, he did so. They announced a rematch for the NXT tag team titles this week on TV with the Street Profits defending against Fish and O'Reilly. Jordan Miles, the winner of the breakout tournament, confronted the Undisputed Era as they tried to leave, and he had a contract in his hand. Adam Cole took that to mean that he wanted to cash in on his opportunity to challenge any champion in NXT, that he wanted to cash in on Cole and his NXT title. And Miles went to hand him the contract, and when Cole reached out for it, Miles dropped it, smiled, and walked off. So that match is going to happen in 2 weeks. Not this Wednesday, but next Wednesday on NXT TV. Once this show expands to 2 hours, it's going to be tougher to spread these matches out the way they do now. I kind of like the fact that, you know, they'll announce a match for next week, but then there'll be like a big match or a big title match, and that's in 2 weeks. I like it. I like, you know, they give these matches room to breathe, and it's going to be harder to do that when this show expands. That's one of the nice things about the show being in the format and the length that it is now. But, you know, the expansion, it just changes the way that they approach writing these shows. I trust the people who write this show, and I always had a certain trust, for example, in the writers of Lucha Underground. Even when stuff didn't always make sense, I trusted that the story was going somewhere, and more often than not it was, because they put together a great television show. I have that same trust for the most part in NXT, so as long as the same people are pretty much running the show, I trust that they'll find a way to make it work. But, you know, anytime you tinker with the formula like that, you gotta worry a little bit. Damian Priest beat Mansoor with The Reckoning. Mansoor got some offense in, but it was more or less a squash to highlight Priest. Mansoor is really good, though. Now, Mansoor is really good. He could be somebody who benefits from an expanded show if he gets featured more. Before this, it probably was a few months since the last time we saw him on TV. Mia Yim beat Vanessa Bourne with her Protect Your Neck finish. Shayna Baszler came down to the ring to try to recruit Yim into her stable afterwards, and Marina Shafir and Jessamine Duke were out there. Jessamine Duke had her arm in a sling from the attack by Yim a few weeks ago. Yim, instead of joining them, decided to attack them, and they overwhelmed her and left her laying. And when the show was over, on YouTube, they put a clip up of Mia Yim outside the building, and she confronted William Regal and said, you gotta give them to me. And Regal, it was great. Regal is like the most pragmatic general manager that they have ever had in the history of this company, and it's why I love him in that role so much. Rarely does he even show up on TV. When he does, it's because he's got an important announcement to make, like Jack Tunney years ago. We would never see Jack Tunney unless there was a reason to see Jack Tunney. Regal is the closest thing to a Jack Tunney that we have now, except he's got personality. But he's also very down-to-earth, and everything he says generally makes sense. He looked at Mia Yim and says, he didn't say it in these words, but basically told her to fuck off. You got your shot. You lost. And of course these women are going to come after you. And what do you think? What did you expect? You went after them first. You attacked them. I think it was Marina Shafir was in her car and you attacked her in the parking lot. You slammed the door on her. What did you expect would happen? And he walked off. And he's right. He's 100% right. And I cannot believe that they are continuing with this. I think that she should join them. I really think that it would be a better role on this show for Mia Yim and would give her more longevity if she actually went heel and joined their little faction. Because otherwise, she already had the match with Shayna, she lost, she's just slide back down the ladder like everybody else. She'll be like Bianca Belair and all these women who get their shot, they lose, and then they just slide right back down the ladder. If she was smart, she would join. She would take the deal. Take the deal, Mia. Take the deal. Then, out of nowhere, we got a really good hype video for Keith Lee's feud with Dominik Dijakovic. Both men missed time due to injuries. They had started a program together. Dijak had a knee issue. Lee, I'm not sure that they ever disclosed what the injury was, but supposedly he had some kind of a minor injury that he was dealing with, and now he's obviously over it. So they're picking up right where they left off, which is awesome. And they even showed footage from their matches in PWG and Evolve, plus their earlier match on NXT where both guys got counted out. Two big guys doing things that big guys are not supposed to be able to do. This is going to be a lot of fun. I've been waiting a while, as you guys know, to see these two go at it again. So I'm really happy that they're picking up with it. Shane Thorne got a win over Bronson Reed, who we first saw in the breakout tournament. Thorne won with a shining wizard. It's almost as though he's sort of playing the role of this frustrated, disgruntled veteran of sorts in NXT. I mean, at least they've got some kind of direction for him. His tag team partner up and left. And it's tough, you know, when you're in a tag team, it could really change the whole trajectory of your career. They could have easily said to Shane Thorne, look, we don't have anything for you. We signed you as part of this TM61 team, and now one half of TM61 is gone. And with all the talent they have down there, it'd be very easy for a guy like him to fall through the cracks. So the fact that they seem to be doing something with him, I think, is a good sign. Then we had Matt Riddle and Killian Dane. Riddle attacked Dane from behind while his music was playing, and Dane was distracted. He was looking, waiting for Riddle to come out. Riddle jumped him from behind. Riddle kicked one of his flip-flops off right into the crowd. Could have put an eye out with that thing. Dane worked over Riddle's injured ribs. Finish came when Riddle went for his twisting, floating bro off the top rope, but Dane got his knees up, then sent him shoulder first into the post. Riddle fell to the floor. Dane went for a charge, but Riddle dodged, and Dane hit the ring steps. So Riddle, he removed the top part of the steps. So now you just have that flat top from the bottom half of the steps. And he teased doing a powerbomb. He was going to powerbomb Killian Dane on top of the ring steps, but there was a weird jump cut here in the editing. And instead, we saw Dane go for what I have to assume was intended to be a backdrop onto the steps, but Riddle did not get the full rotation. And so he landed face first, right on the steps, right on the edge of the steps. Dane followed with a running senton onto Riddle on the steps. Got him in the ring. Three Vader bombs later, Killian Dane picks up the clean pin on Matt Riddle. Show ended with Riddle chasing after Dane all the way to the back. Good main event, decent show overall, and I'm really looking forward to Lee and Dijakovic, who are having their match on TV this week. It's time for this week's RSPW Rewind. And I got a lot of divided opinion last week on the inclusion of the background music last week. I was going to just ditch it altogether, but I've gotten a lot of comments saying that people like it, keep it, maybe lower it. So here's what we'll do. I will probably, after I'm done with all this, go back and insert the music. I'll lower it even more. You may even barely hear it. And we'll see if we can find a happy medium. And if that still doesn't work, I'll ditch it. I just thought it's something to, you know, separate the segment out. Make it a little more humorous. But anyway, this week's RSPW Rewind takes us back to the year 1998. And some negative opinions on Stone Cold Steve Austin. Yes, as Austin was ascending to his peak of popularity before he had even won his first WWF title. You can dig back in the archives and find people who were not a fan of Austin 316. Jay Jaffe is one of those examples. He writes here on January 8th, 1998, "Someone please give the stunner to Austin. His act is getting old. It would be cool if he came into the ring to give someone the stunner, and they block his kick and then give it to him." Volman responds, "I would pay good money to see Owen break his lousy, stinking, worthless neck." Wow. That's pretty violent there from Mr. Volman. Crewstorm then comes to Austin's defense. He says, Yeah, I love this crap. Two worthless, slobbish, lazy lame-asses who can't handle the fact that a guy who simply changed his name from Steve Williams to Steve Austin makes more money, has more fame, and probably has better self-esteem than you two combined. Every Fargan post I see that says the same shit, Austin's getting old, this, that, and the other. You fuckers are probably the same motherfuckers going around saying that's the bottom line to everyone. Or some hypocrites out there who use some stupid signature like asswipe316 and cause J-Rock said so. Or some other nonsense. Hell, throw in the people who can't handle the fact that Austin has been putting his arms up into the air for a long time, and he still gets a huge pop every stinking time he does it. Jealousy. Jealousy and envy. Well, aren't those the same thing? Jealousy and envy? Anyway. He's doing something you dickers wish you would be doing, and you probably would want more money to boot. George Costanza then responds. I shit you not. George Costanza responds. I suppose you still mark out whenever Hogan does the leg drop of doom. Face it, things get old. Imagine considering Austin's shtick old already at this point, as they were building him up to strap the rocket to him. And for George Costanza in any way to compare Hogan dropping the big leg as being old to Austin giving people stunners when Hogan has been dropping that leg since the AWA, yada yada yada, you're an idiot. So Cruestorm responds. Cruestorm is not giving up here. He's a big defender of Stone Cold. He says, yeah, sure, Hogan's leg drop. I mark all the time, considering I've not seen Hogan wrestle since Starrcade in 1996, the first and last WCW pay-per-view I will probably order. It's fair to say that I don't give a Walt Whitman about Hogan's weak finish. I love that. Can I say that I love that? I think I might use that from now on. I'm not just going to be crude and say I don't give a shit or I don't give a rat's ass. Anybody can say that. I don't give a Walt Whitman about Hogan's weak finisher. At least the stunner gives you the chance to mark out a little bit. That is, if the stunnee properly lands on his knees in order to sell it perfectly. Owen Hart sells it perfectly. Vince flopping over the top of Austin's shoulder did not. But since some people here can't handle popularity, it's fair to say that nobody in wrestling should try something when it comes to longevity, because RSPW will get bored with you. If all you people are bitching about Austin shtick now, how many of you who watched WCW gave up on Flair 10 years ago? Same argument, but of course Ric Flair shouldn't be judged like that. He's only been doing this at Little Act for 15 plus years. Try somebody new, people. Go rant about the Luchadors or something. And Cruestorm would pick up for Austin, or stick up, for Austin in another post, 10 days later on January 18th, titled, To Hell with RSPW. Oh, this should be good. So here's what he said. You know, if you were Eric Bischoff or Vince McMahon, would you consider just turning your back on even acknowledging the smarts? Everybody and their freaking fourth cousin finds something wrong with the Royal Rumble this year, and as predicted, half of you wrote it off. I assume he means wrote off the show. Oh, please, let Sold Out save you people. That would be NWO Sold Out. So then he goes, and there's a whole list here, and I'll just go through this. He says, number one, OG, Austin won the Rumble. After reading some of the posts here, hell, Austin sucks, Austin is this and that, you'd get the idea that Steve Austin was some sort of asshole. As far as I could tell, way more than half the people at the San Jose Arena were more than receptive to Austin winning the Royal Rumble. Number two, OG, the entire pay-per-view sucked. Here's an RSPW original. I suppose all you people could come up with something better, and yes, that's without the fantastical WWF/WCW wet dream fantasy card that will never happen. Number three, OG, Mike Tyson got booed. Why is Vince McMahon paying him all this money? Why is Vince McMahon working with this ear-biting convicted rapist? Funny how everyone convicts people in their minds when they never question other things. I think OJ did in fact commit murder, but can I in fact state that he is guilty? Sure. Can I state that the broad, oh boy, here we go, who said that she was raped by Tyson probably consented to sex, then turn around and accused him of rape? Sure, why not? I think the feminist bullshit mentality in this country was the epitome of that trial. Oh, this is where Cruestorm goes off the rails here. I'm not saying Tyson is the greatest role model, but he has in fact produced more national publicity than the fallen hero to some, Bret Hart, ever did during his entire career. That only is the that is the only reason, he says, why it was done. The WWF has easily gotten more publicity than Dennis Rodman did for WCW. Was it worth $4 million? We'll see. But for Bret Hart to say that the WWF is cash-strapped or that they're in financial trouble is just poppycock, coming from a disgruntled former employee who still wants to put his thumbprint all over his little brother's career. Hey, Owen, come to WCW and be my underling again. No pleasing any of you, and then Vince wonders why he hasn't beaten Nitro in so long. It's the people in RSPW that is the poison. I point all of this out, and I wanted to pick a thread like this, because I think, remember the whole point of even starting this segment in the first place, the idea that discourse on social media and online and wrestling message board forums and places like that has gotten so toxic. And in some circles it has. It has gotten very toxic. But it's as though this is some new phenomenon, and I keep pointing out each and every week that it is not. So you heard there, this goes beyond just, you know, basic wrestling banter here. This guy was, as soon as he started talking about like the feminist movement and stuff, it reminded me of all of these posts I see from people online today talking about the same kind of stuff. This was in 1998. RSPW was Twitter before Twitter was even tweeted. So this has once again been your weekly reminder that wrestling fans have always argued over trivial BS, and many of them have always been miserable human beings. Time for the mailbag. You can always email me questions at thesolomonster@gmail.com. As you guys are well aware, please always include your name and where you are from when you write in. We'll do a few questions here and then get to number 7 in the countdown of the 8 best matches in the career of Rey Mysterio. That is still to come. But I wanted to include this email I got last week. It's not a question, but it did come into the mailbag from a longtime listener of the show, Subir, in Toronto. He has been listening since 2012. He was only 13 years old at the time. He is now 21, as if I don't feel old enough. SummerSlam was, of course, in Toronto this year. He was not at the pay-per-view. He was actually here in New York, and he flew home on Sunday night. This would have been last Sunday. And when he got in, he went to the gym where his friend works. This is around 1 o'clock in the morning. When he gets to the gym, who should he see but Vincent Kennedy McMahon working out with his trainer? And Subir is freaking out. Vince eventually finishes up. He comes walking by the front desk where he and his friend are, and they start chewing his ear off about the product. And I don't mean in like chewing his ear off in a negative way. They're just telling him, well, what an impact wrestling has had on them since they were kids. And Vince asks them, he goes, can you make it tonight? That being to Monday Night Raw. And they said yes, and he gave them tickets to the show. He had them left at will call for them. And it wasn't until they got to the arena that they realized that they were front row seats. And he says, I also wanted to say that while we were talking to him, he seemed genuinely interested in what we were saying and appreciative of our years of fandom. I must say that I did not expect for Vince to be as nice of a guy as he came off that day, but I am definitely happy to know that he is. And with all of these stories you hear about him, you wonder what's true and what's not. But Subir shared photos in his email of him with Vince at the gym, and Vince giving the little thumbs up, and he shared a photo of him sitting in the front row that night at the show. That's very cool. That is very cool. Honestly, you know, every story that I have heard from someone who has actually met Vince McMahon or run into him has always been a positive one. I've never heard anything bad in terms of him, you know, running into fans and being a dick or anything like that. A friend of mine ran into him many years ago down in Florida, not far from where he has another home. This was years ago, and the same thing, you know, cool guy. I met him too, although it's a little bit different because when I met him, that was 25 years ago. So, yeah, I've shared that photo before on my Twitter and on my Facebook page, where Vince is looking into the camera and I'm looking off to the side with a big smile on my face, like I saw like a Playboy model walk by or something. But I mean, I was like 12 at the time, you know, so I didn't have a whole conversation with him. Just don't be around him, I guess, on a Monday or a Tuesday night, and then he's fun to be around. I mean, the best thing recently was the story that Sean Waltman told on his podcast about being at Triple H's 50th birthday party a few weeks ago. And Vince was off in an area all by himself. I mean, you got people on the lake, you got people, you know, doing all kinds of activities. And then off in that section over there is Vince McMahon doing some axe throwing. You get people riding jet skis and go-karts. They had all kinds of activities going on. And there's this 74-year-old man glued to the axe-throwing station that they had set up. Why you would even have an axe-throwing station at a birthday party, I don't know, but that sounds pretty cool. But there's Vince McMahon throwing axes. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. I thought it was a cool story. And also, look, I talk about Vince McMahon in terms of the product and everything that we see on television, which he oversees, and the XFL and all this other stuff. And there's a lot of very passionate opinions about Vince McMahon as a person, as a promoter, and about, you know, the product, frankly, that he has been putting out now for a very long time. And has he lost a step? And, you know, should he step aside and retire? And, we've talked about this so many times before. But a lot of it tends to be negative. So when I hear a story like that, and I see the photos and it gets backed up and everything, you know what? I'm going to share that story. Just in the interest of being even on all sides, you know, I think it's important to hear that there is another side to this guy where he actually is very cool to the fans and the people that he meets. Which isn't always the case when it comes to some of these wrestlers when you meet them in public. But I've never heard a negative story about Vince. I'm not saying that there are none that exist, but I've not heard any stories or personal experiences from people who have seen him or bumped into him that were negative in any way. Alex from Houston, Deluxe Man. With the upcoming move to USA Network approaching, WWE could be looking to beef up the NXT roster in order to fill up 2 hours of weekly content. My question is, if you had the power to choose 10 former NXT talents to move back to the Black and Gold brand, who would you choose? It can be from Raw, SmackDown Live, or 205 Live. I wouldn't. I mean, 10 talents, that's way too many. That is way too many. That's the worst thing they could do to NXT, would be to flood it with 10 faces from the main roster. It would just be overkill. Then maybe if you cycled them out over a period of a couple of years or something, but I would not move that many people. And maybe that's not what you mean, but that's kind of how I took it. I would not move that many faces back to NXT. Would I move some? Yes. And I tried to narrow it down to 3. I've got 3 names in mind who I think could benefit from a move and could also help the brand. Cesaro. Cesaro is stuck in a utility role on the main roster. He's not in the worst spot in the world. He's been a tag team champion and, you know, he's been, you know, at times he's been prominently featured, but he's been mostly used as a tag team guy. Whether it was Cesaro and Tyson Kidd, Cesaro and Jack Swagger, Cesaro and Sheamus, they clearly do not see a real future for him. It's been 5 or 6 years by now, at least, as a real force as a single star. And I think that's bullshit, because I think he's got a lot to give as a single star. So Cesaro is a guy who I would move to NXT. NXT, he could be more of a featured player who could go out there. He could have great matches and work well with pretty much anybody they put him in the ring with. And I know he's spending most of his time these days on the NXT UK brand, but if Cassius Ohno ever wandered back to NXT, or maybe Cesaro would wander on over to NXT UK. I just love the idea, however brief it may be. Even if it's for one frickin' match, one big match they promote on TV, I would love to get a Kings of Wrestling reunion. So, anyway, Cesaro would be one. Chad Gable would be another. Chad Gable has been utterly wasted since hitting the main roster, and I don't mean he has a drinking problem. He has been utterly wasted since going to the main roster, and I am very worried about where this shorty nonsense is headed. Chad Gable back in NXT, even as a single. Yeah, he was a tag team guy the last time he was there, but even as a single, I think could be a big get for NXT, and it could really give him a shot in the arm as far as his own career goes. And the third name would be Asuka. If NXT is no longer a developmental brand, and it hasn't been for a while. It has been the land of the independent stars. It's been this way for a while. Now that they're going to a real network in front of millions of people, and they're growing the show out to 2 hours, and they're going to be making all this money from the show, this is now a third brand. This is not developmental anymore. This is a third brand. So you got to change the way you look at NXT. NXT is no longer a downgrade. It's no longer a demotion. You're just going, it'd be like going from Raw to SmackDown, or SmackDown to Raw. Asuka's gone from Raw to SmackDown. Now Asuka can go from SmackDown to NXT. Because Asuka is another one who has been utterly lost on the main roster. Let her find her way back to NXT, where she never lost, by the way, to be the gatekeeper again for that women's division. You could do something if you want to with her and Shayna Baszler, who's sort of the current gatekeeper. But if Shayna leaves, if she goes to Raw, if she goes to SmackDown, which I think she will, Asuka could step in to take her place and be more of a featured player than she is ever going to be on Mondays or on Fridays. You know, one day she could go back there and maybe even get the, you know, she can go back to Raw or SmackDown and get that elusive rematch with Becky Lynch, the woman she tapped out at the Royal Rumble. I mean, hell, she could use that as her calling card in NXT. I made the man tap out. You can't beat me. Nobody can beat me. Nobody can beat Asuka. Nobody is ready for Asuka. Becky Lynch wasn't ready for Asuka. Then when somebody finally does beat her in NXT, just by her drilling that point in week after week, when somebody finally does beat her, it's going to mean something. It's going to mean something for that person. It's going to elevate them. So Cesaro, Gable, and Asuka. Those would be my three names. If I had to pick three names from the existing brands to migrate over to NXT to help that show out and help their own career, it would be those three. Because they do have name value. They don't have the same kind of name value that people who are on TV every week have. It's not like moving Seth Rollins over or Daniel Bryan over, you know. These are people in some cases who were barely even featured on TV, but they have been on the main roster. So they would at least have some name recognition. And so there's that too, if you want to use that as a reason why they should be moved over. What happens to Kairi Sane? You can move her over too, I guess. I wouldn't keep them together as a team. I think they need to just do their own thing. Kairi, if you leave Kairi behind, is she going to get lost in the shuffle? Yes. But Asuka had more of a shot than Kairi ever did. Kairi still has not gotten a shot at all on the main roster. She's had no chance. Maybe give her a chance. See if she can make hay on the main roster. And if not, then she could end up back in NXT too. But those are the three names I would move over. Benjamin from Melbourne, Australia. Hurt and heel. Hurt and heel. Who do you think the first person will be that the Fiend will heal? I was thinking maybe Luke Harper, and in turn make his character substantially creepier. What do you think? I think you're assuming that Vince McMahon even wants to heal Luke Harper. If he wanted to, he would have done it by now. If he wanted to, I think that could work. But he would have to, I think he would have to completely revamp his look. Like Broken Matt, Lake of Reincarnation type stuff. Cut the hair. Shave the beard, nicer clothes, let him speak more. All of the things that have not happened with Luke Harper in his career in WWE. And so then maybe in the Firefly Funhouse skits, he could be Bray's Ed McMahon, you know, and introduce him each time he comes out. Instead of the Fiend, it's he could be the Friend. Friends of the Fiend. Luke Harper could be one of them. Santos from Honolulu. Hey, Solomonster, was listening to your thoughts on what WWE has done with the King of the Ring in recent years and its lack of importance. I have an idea to try to revamp the King of the Ring concept and wanted to get your take. What if they did the King of the Ring pay-per-view every 4 or so years, like the World Cup or the Olympics, where the best of the best compete to be the king, and in winning, they get a championship match at a major pay-per-view like the Royal Rumble or a Survivor Series. If they do it this way, it could add an air of importance to the title of king and could change someone's career. Of course, all of this is predicated on WWE actually taking it seriously. What do you think? I give you an A for effort because you're at least putting more thought into trying to make it more important than they are. They have not done that at all in years. They're not doing it now, although the tournament's not over yet. But certainly for years now, they have not done anything to make that tournament seem important, which, you know, every time they say the prestigious King of the Ring, I want to bang my head against the wall. How stupid do you think we are? What's so prestigious about it? You've done two tournaments in, what, almost 10 years? And look at the way that those winners were treated. The prestigious King of the Ring tournament. It's as prestigious as the piece of gum that I almost stepped in on the floor outside my house the other day. So, A for effort. I think it's not a bad idea. I don't know about holding off on it every 4 years. I would still like the idea of doing it every year. It might be more palatable if it was every 2 years, maybe, or every 3 years. And then the question is, if you're doing it that way, if it's all about the best of the best, are you just putting, you know, main eventers in there? Because the King of the Ring tournament in the past has been a good vehicle, not every year, but some years it became a good vehicle to try to get a lower card guy or a mid card guy to that next level. There's no reason for Brock Lesnar to be in the King of the Ring and win, but if you're going to do a tournament that's the best of the best and bring it back as a pay-per-view and, you know, the winner gets a shot at the championship, maybe people like that should be in the King of the Ring. Maybe there should be people like Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns and Finn Balor and The Fiend and Daniel Bryan in the King of the Ring tournament. But I just don't know that that's necessary. I think you want to at least have half the bracket filled with people who are not as up on the totem pole as those guys are, with the hope that maybe one of them can break out. But doing it every 4 years, I think, would be, it's too long to wait. I mean, that's what they've done. They've waited years between tournaments. And it sucks. Nobody wants to wait that long. So I wouldn't wait that long, but I'm all for putting some bigger names in there. And for treating it like it really is a big deal, which they've done a very poor job of doing so far. Damien in Wales, UK, I really enjoyed your top 10 countdown to the best SummerSlam matches. During your review of Bret Owen Cage match, you said that if Shawn Michaels is Mr. WrestleMania, then Bret Hart is Mr. SummerSlam. So, overall, buy or sell, Shawn Michaels miss his WrestleMania matches, or Bret Hart and his SummerSlam matches? Well, I got to buy on Shawn Michaels and his WrestleMania match. There's just so many more of them. It's not even really a fair comparison. And this is from somebody who is a big Bret Hart fan. I mean, there's just so many more great matches and classic matches that Shawn Michaels has had at WrestleMania. I count about 5 great ones for Bret at SummerSlam. 2 of which were tag team matches, not even singles. And then, you know, the matches with Perfect and Bulldog and Owen. Combined, I count about 5 great Bret SummerSlam matches. I won't include the matches with Doink and Lawler in 93 just because it was more of a great angle than, like, as a whole, better than any one individual part being so great. But then you look at WrestleMania and you've got Shawn against Razor in the ladder match. You've got the Iron Man match with Bret. You've got WrestleMania 19 against Jericho, 20 against Triple H and Benoit, 21 against Kurt Angle. Even 22 against Vince. He brought Vince McMahon to one of the best matches, if not the best, that Vince has ever had. 23 against Cena, 24 against Flair. 24 against Flair was memorable. I do not consider it would not be on my list of the best Shawn Michaels matches. It had a great story. It had the emotional finish. As a match, it was good. I would not call it any better than that. So it wouldn't be on my list of the best ones. But then you get to 25 and 26 and the 2 matches with The Undertaker, 25 being my favorite WrestleMania match. And then, of course, the rematch the next year that ended his career until that sweet Saudi money came calling. But there's just so many more that Sean had than Brett did that I have to buy on Sean. And finally here, William from Calgary has a buy or sell on the best wrestler-manager combo of these three pairings. Undertaker and Paul Bearer, Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman, or Okada and Ghetto in New Japan. Well, let me just say this. This was a short list. I mean, you can make a list of a whole lot more than that. And I would say the most iconic, the most money-drawing combo, at least in WWE, has to be Randy Savage and Elizabeth. I mean, Randy Savage, he probably has a pretty good career for himself and is successful even without her. But maybe not. Maybe not as successful. Maybe not as big of a star. You know, I know Elizabeth, she wasn't overly physical the way that like a Sherry Martel was and some other managers. But it cannot be understated how important a role that she played in his career. And absolutely belongs in the Hall of Fame. But since they're not on the list, for me, I have to buy on Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman. Yeah, it's close with Undertaker and Paul Bearer being in there. But I have to buy on Heyman and Lesnar. Heyman and Lesnar are just so perfect as a combo. Absolutely perfect. Paul Bearer was the perfect character to kind of bring the Undertaker down to the ring, and he holds up the urn and he does the zombie sit up. And, you know, Paul Bearer did a lot of promos for the Undertaker. Undertaker would talk too, but Paul Bearer would do a lot of the talking for him. And they were together for 6 years. They were together for 6 years. Even longer than that, if you go back pre-WWE, I'm pretty sure that Paul Bearer managed him even before any of them were in the company, at least for a period of time. But 6 years in WWE before Paul Bearer turned on him and went with Mankind. And it's one of the great manager-wrestler combos of all time. But Lesnar and Heyman, it's like peanut butter and jelly, man. You know, I just, whenever Heyman was out of the picture, just it wasn't the same. Lesnar just was not the same. And that goes for his first run, too. And a lot more so with his second run. Lesnar will speak every now and then. Heyman basically does all of the talking for him. He sells this guy. He sells the matches. He sells the pay-per-views. There's nobody like Paul Heyman in that role. Now, that's different than saying that Paul Heyman is the number one greatest manager of all time. I have him at number two, behind Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan is number one. Bobby Heenan managed a lot more people. He was a lot more, I feel, influential on their careers. And some of those combinations, whether it was Heenan and Andre, Heenan and Mr. Perfect is another great one. But Heenan managed a lot of different guys to a lot of success. And he took these big bumps, which is something Heyman, yeah, he used to do, but not like Bobby. I mean, Bobby used to be a wrestler. Bobby would bounce all over the place. He would get his ass kicked constantly until he just physically couldn't do it anymore. But in terms of a wrestler-manager combo, I don't think you can find me one better in that company, at least, than Lesnar and Heyman. And I'll expand it out to other companies, too, because Okada and Ghetto were good together, and they were together for many years, but I don't know. I just don't look at them as in that elite, you know, upper echelon. They were very good. And it was a big deal when he turned on Okada last year. But Lesnar and Heyman, to me, are just the quintessential wrestler-manager combo. Far more important, I really think, to Brock's career than even Paul Bearer was to The Undertaker. So if you want to measure the two of them, that, to me, is what gives him the slight edge. And it's why I hope they never break them up. You never know how many more years Lesnar's going to be around for. But as long as he's going to be around, he needs Paul Heyman with him. We've already seen them split once. And it made for a one-night cool swerve. And then reality sort of set in. And it's like, well, maybe you shouldn't have broken these two up. You know, to do it again, I think, would be a huge mistake. They're just at a point now where they should never be separated. They should always be together. And Heyman should be the one inducting him one day into the Hall of Fame. Here we go.
tap out.
We are counting down the 8 best matches in the career of Rey Mysterio as we count down the weeks to sound off episode 619 coming up on September 29th. One of Mysterio's all-time greatest opponents, and some people might even say his best opponent, the one that he worked probably the most with early in his career, was Psicosis, or Psicosis, depending on who the announcers were. In WCW, he was Psicosis, so we'll call him Psicosis. Even Bret Hart once famously gave him props in a promo in WCW, although he called him Hypnosis before Gene Okerlund quickly corrected him. Mysterio and Psicosis wrestled all over the place throughout 1995, 1996. Probably had just dozens of matches together. One that stands out, and this is actually not number 7 on the list, but I do think that it's worth mention here, is their 2 out of 3 falls match on ECW Hardcore TV. The October 17, 1995 episode, which is archived on the WWE Network if you want to go check it out. It's hard to go back and watch those old ECW shows because of all the music that they've dubbed over, but again, still worth going back and checking out. The two of them each made their ECW debut against one another the month before that match at the ECW Gangsta's Paradise show. Mysterio won that match, so this was the rematch. And Rey was only 21 years old when this match took place. So, 2 out of 3 falls. Rey took the first fall with a Hurricanrana into a pin. Psicosis took the second fall after catching Rey off of a moonsault attempt into a tombstone. And Psicosis took the third and deciding fall with a twisting senton off the top rope onto a chair. But not before hitting a senton on Rey through the table that Rey was on outside the ring. And that impressed one of the fans in the crowd enough that he actually turned to look at the camera. He turned to look at the hard camera and stared right at its soul. And he turned back around. This was innovative stuff back then. At least here in this country it was. I'm sure in Mexico this was something that they were accustomed to seeing, but ECW bringing these guys in was really bringing in a style that a lot of American wrestling fans were not used to seeing, and these guys just tore it up, and it was a great match. So these two, a few months later, had another match. Surprise, surprise. They had a non-tournament exhibition in Japan at the Super J Cup in December of 95 that was very good. And both men were very upset being left out of the tournament. They were only in an exhibition. It was a non-tournament match. So they did what anybody would do who was pissed off about being left out. They proceeded to steal the show. And that wasn't even the best match that the two of them had together. Which brings us to match number 7 in the countdown. Rey Mysterio Jr. against Psicosis in the opening match of WCW Bash at the Beach 1996. This match gets overshadowed because of something else that happened on the same show that night. You may have heard about it. You know, Hulk Hogan coming back as the third man with Hall and Nash turning heel on WCW and forming this little group called the NWO or something like that. So Rey had made his WCW debut the month before at the Great American Bash. He challenged Dean Malenko for the Cruiserweight Championship, his first match on pay-per-view. And he lost. He fell short. He did not win the championship. So this was only his second pay-per-view appearance. They brought in Mike Tenay on commentary because he knew all the history between these two. He knew all the history of the Luchadors, and he had called, I think, the When Worlds Collide show in 94. So he joined Tony Schiavone, Dusty Rhodes, and Bobby Heenan on commentary. You know, we talk about 3-man announce crews. We had a 4-man booth for this match here on this show. But it's a good thing he did. It's a good thing Tenay did join them because Schiavone and Dusty and Heenan had absolutely no clue how to call this match. It was just comical. I mean, Schiavone was fine, I guess. But it's comical to listen to Bobby Heenan cracking jokes on these guys and Dusty Rhodes being Dusty Rhodes. Heenan at one point said that one of these guys, that being Psicosis, has hair like Peg Bundy from Married with Children. Kind of makes me sad there's going to be people who go back and watch these shows on the network and going to listen to that and go, who's Peg Bundy? Anyway, first half started out with some mat wrestling by the standards of these two. It was actually pretty slow. It was actually a pretty slow start to the match. Once it kicked into high gear, it just was a level apart from anything else that WCW was doing at the time, or WWE for that matter. And it was not long before Psychosis nearly spiked himself on a suicide dive out to the floor onto Ray. Heenan said that he bent one of his horns, which he did not. Tenay said that Ray told him that his idol as a youngster was Scott Steiner, which is where he gets the Frankensteiner from, the Hurricanrana. Springboard into the Hurricanrana by Ray, only good for a two count though. So with Ray on the floor, Psychosis hits a top rope senton. He got height on this senton. So Ray is on the ground. Rey Mysterio is not even on a table. He is laying on the floor on that thin mat outside the ring. Psychosis from the top rope jumps high into the air and just lands with his weight. And it's not fun for Psychosis either, I would imagine, to take that move. And just hits this senton on the floor. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, we're used to seeing guys now do running sentons. Samoa Joe does it in every match. It seems like a lot of the heavier guys love to do the running senton. Killian Dane does it in NXT. But this is different, though. I mean, you're coming off the top rope like that. I mean, that's a lot of impact. That's a lot of impact. If not on the other guy, that's a lot of impact on your own rear end. So, fast forward, Psychosis is on the apron. And Ray climbs up to the top rope. He jumps off the top rope. He hits a Frankensteiner off the apron down to the floor. He takes Psychosis down to the floor. Ray springboards off the ropes with a drop kick to the back of Psychosis's head. Psychosis goes sliding all the way out under the bottom rope to the floor. Ray is on the apron now. And Ray hits a twisting acai moonsault. And his foot hits the top of the guardrail on the way down. Heenan is just mortified by the names of all of these moves. He hears Tenay calling the acai moonsault. He goes, the acai what? He just could not believe that Tenay would know the names to all these moves. Psychosis puts Ray up on the turnbuckles. He climbs up. He turns his back to Ray. And he's climbing up. So he's in a position where he looks like he's going to give Ray a razor's edge off the top rope. This is a famous finish here to this match. Well, the move he was going to give him, as Tenay pointed out, is a move that is called Splash Mountain. And he goes to give him Splash Mountain, but on the way down, Ray turns it into a Hurricanrana. He Hurricanrana's Psychosis over, and that is good enough to score the pin. Not enough to just hear me talk about the finish. It's a great finish, and the crowd popped huge for it, and Dusty was going nuts for it. Heenan was going nuts for it. I think Dusty was the one who he did this Phil Rizzuto ride. He goes, holy cow, Phil Rizzuto, says Dusty Rhodes. The next night on Nitro, Mysterio did finally win his first Cruiserweight title. He did beat Dean Malenko. He would hold the championship all the way to Halloween Havoc. And like the match that Mysterio had with Kurt Angle at SummerSlam, which I had last week as number 8 in the countdown, this is one of the best opening matches to a pay-per-view that you'll ever see. And it was a big part of Nitro's winning formula in those early days when they would feature the Cruiserweights in the opening match on Monday nights to set the tone for the entire show. It's a formula that I think Eric Bischoff, and who knows exactly what role it is that he has. I've heard so many conflicting things about what Bischoff's actual status is on SmackDown. Oh, he's going to be the creative force behind SmackDown. Well, he's not really going to have anything to do with the writing. He's more there to just make sure that the processes behind the scenes are going smoothly. And, oh, well, he'll be the liaison with Fox and WWE because Bischoff has a lot of TV experience. Who the hell knows? Bischoff can end up becoming, a paratrooper or something. Who the fuck knows what he's going to be doing for this show? But if Bischoff has any control over the layout of the show and the format of the show, even if he's not having a hand in the actual writing and the creative, hey, Eric Bischoff was the guy who was in charge on Monday Nitro when they brought in the Cruiserweights and they were opening the show on most weeks with them. Now Bischoff, maybe he can bring some of that to SmackDown. You know, maybe if the rumors are true and the 205 Live roster ends up being absorbed into SmackDown and those guys, the Cruiserweights now are going to be on Friday nights, You've got Eric Bischoff behind the scenes. It seems like a pretty easy formula. Start the show hot. You know, maybe not everybody knows who these guys are. You think people, when they started putting Rey Mysterio and Juventud and Blitzkrieg and Psychosis and La Parca and all these guys at the beginning of Nitro, you'd think most of the audience knew who they were? Of course not. But they let them go out there for 10 or 15 minutes and just wow the audience. I think it would be different now because, you know, again, it was something that a lot of fans, I think, in America were not exposed to in 1996. A very different world in 1996. Now, I mean, we've seen every style there is to see. All we see are high spots on TV every week. You've got big guys who have no business doing topes out of the ring, doing them for the sake of doing them because we've got to go to a commercial. So let's hit a dive. That just wasn't the case back then. So maybe it wouldn't work. But I do think there is something to be said for opening the show hot and not with a freaking promo every week. Not with Shane McMahon dancing to the ring. Shane McMahon could dance to the ring in segment 2. Or segment 3. Doesn't have to be in segment 1. Start the show hot. Send these guys out there. You're going to be on Fox. You may have people watching who have never watched a day of wrestling in their lives. Yeah? They've got a lot of talented guys in that division. Send them on out there. Get the crowd hooked. Then you can go right into whatever angle or match or whatever it is with the big names. That's one of the things that Bischoff did right with Nitro and with WCW back then. So to go back and watch a lot of these, you know, Rey matches, as I've done the last few weeks, and I watched a lot of his WCW matches, this was just one of them. It is interesting to go back and just see how the way that they were doing things back then. But yeah, that was 22 years ago, 23 years ago. It's a long time. So that was match number 7 in the countdown. Next week will be at number 6. Hopefully you guys can do what a lot of you did for the SummerSlam countdown. A lot of you said whatever the match was in the countdown, you'd go on the network or YouTube or wherever, and you would watch the matches. And it was cool to go back and go through each one. You could do the same thing here with the Mysterio countdown. I can't say whether all of the matches will be accessible on the WWE network or not. I don't want to give anything away. But it is it's fun for me, too, to be able to go back and refresh my memory on some of these matches, because I had a whole list. I mean, that's the way I usually do these things. I'll put my initial list together and go back and rewatch a lot of the matches, but my initial list may have 15 or 20 different things on it. When you got to narrow it down to 10, or in this case, 8, from someone's entire career who's had the career that Rey Mysterio's had, it's a hard thing to do. But you get to go back and watch all these old matches, so it's pretty cool. You remember things you may have forgotten, or I thought, in a couple of cases, there were matches I thought were great that I went back and I said, you know what, that wasn't really as good as I remember it. Not with Rey, necessarily, but sometimes that happens. So, if all goes according to plan, and I don't miss any shows, and you guys know I don't miss shows, then I am on track for Sound Off 619 on September 29th. And on that show, we will feature the top 2 final matches in the Mysterio countdown. Keep sending in your questions. Follow me on Twitter. At Solomonster is where you can find me. I will be, as I said earlier, watching the Evolve show tonight and then doing a review with Davey Portman over on postwrestling.com. So I'll tweet out a link in the morning when that show goes up. We'll be talking about that. And then next weekend's a big weekend. There's a whole lot of wrestling shows next weekend. I am probably just going to be watching and covering All Out. I don't even think I'll have time to watch any of the other ones. The New Japan one and the NXT UK one, I probably won't even get to see at all. But definitely we'll be covering All Out, doing a live stream on YouTube Saturday night. Episode 615 will be dropping on Sunday. So you'll have a lot of audio coming your way next weekend, right before the Labor Day holiday. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a good week. The final week of August. And I will see you for a ton of wrestling coming up next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Sasha Banks is back, and Michael Cole could not contain his excitement.
Oh my, could it be? It is! It's boss time!
You know, he's been holding that in for 4 months. I'm surprised that he wasn't like a wind-up doll saying it over and over and over again.
It's boss time! It's boss time! It's boss time!
The Sala Monster sounds off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesalamonster for sound off extras and more. And follow the Sala Monster on Twitter @SalaMonster.
Sala Monster.
Sala Monster.
Put that cigarette out.
Sala Monster sounds off.